Ms. Poe, can you please take the attendance roll?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Shreve. Dr. Brundage.
Present.
Dr. Flowers.
Present.
We have a quorum.
The purpose of the meeting is to discuss and approve the regular session minutes of August 21st, 2019. Do I hear a motion to approve the minutes?
I motioned approval of the minutes as written.
That sounds good. Approval of the minutes as written.
In the second?
I second the motion.
All in favor, aye.
Thank you. Do I hear a motion to adjourn the meeting?
So move a motion to adjourn.
I second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Meeting adjourned.
Thank you.
The time is now 8:30 a.m. on October 4th, 2019, and I call this meeting of the Arizona Board of Psychologist Examiners to order. Ms. Poe, could you please call the roll?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Dr. Bohansky.
Present.
Dr. Flowers.
Present.
Dr. Davis Wilson.
I believe she's running a few minutes late. She said she might be calling in.
Is Dr. Milan on the phone?
Dr. Brundage?
Present.
Dr. Davey?
Present.
Dr. Meyer?
Present.
Mr. President, we don't have a quorum. We have just five members, so we need to wait for Dr. Malott or Dr. Davis Wilson.
I just lost my little.
Those are the rules.
What? I just lost my little. This.
Can I appoint you an ex officio member for
you?
The,
you may not.
Is there a volunteer?
Can I appoint a volunteer out of the audience as an ex officio member?
You may not. Here, who's on?
Good morning. Who just joined the call?
This is Ramona.
Thank you, Dr. Malott. We were just doing roll call.
Let's start over.
Dr. Bohansky?
Present.
Dr. Flowers?
Present.
Dr. Davis Wilson? Dr. Brundage?
Present.
Dr. Davey?
Present.
Dr. Meyer?
Present.
Dr. Malott?
Present.
Ms. Shreve? We now have a quorum.
Thank you. Please note the time stated on the agenda are approximate. The board makes every effort to be again proceedings at the scheduled time. The board may suspend the discussion of one agenda item, then proceed to a timed item, then return to the former agenda item at a later time. Licensees who attend this board meeting may receive continuing education credit for their attendance. Credit may be used to fulfill the ethics requirement. For psychologists who wish to receive CE credits for attending this meeting, forms are available on the table by the door or from a board staff member. In order to receive credit, please register on the CE roster, complete the three-page CE record form, have the first page stamped and initialed by a board staff member, keep that page for your record, give the other two pages summarizing the meeting to board staff. Please remember that you must stay until the end of the morning session or the afternoon session to earn three credits. You must stay for the entire morning and afternoon session to earn six credits. The board encourages everyone here in attendance today to provide feedback by completing the board assessment form. Please place completed survey forms in the survey box located on the table at the back of the room. At this point, I'd like to recognize board members for your hard work over this past month. Certainly, those folks meeting on our executive director search, the complaint screening committee, the applications committee, and the adjunct legislative committee. I know that you've been continuing to work very diligently. I'd also like to thank our board staff, who has worked exceptional over the past couple months here in keeping us all going. Again, thank you. I'd also like to thank Ms. Galvin and Dr. Malott, who also participated in an ethics training up in Northern Arizona this past week, where we held a mock board meeting as part of the proceedings there. So this is my second board meeting in 1 week, even though the first one was mock, but we'll go on from there. Moving on, a call to the public, agenda item 4. Ms. Poe, is there anyone who's requested to speak?
No, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, somebody just joined the line a minute ago. Can you please state your name, whoever joined?
Dr. Davis Wilson, are you on the line?
Okay. Sorry, I was muted. Yes, it is me, and I am headed in right now as well.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you very much. We will note your attendance. All right. No one to speak to the board. We will pass on that agenda item. That brings us to agenda item number 5, council update. Ms. Galvin, could you please provide the board with an update?
Yes, briefly. There are two cases pending before involving this board at the Court of Appeals. The first matter involves Dr. Gray, who challenged this board's authority to consider anonymous complaints. He filed a special action. We were successful on the merits at in the Superior Court. He has now filed an appeal with the Court of Appeals, and that brief was filed on your behalf yesterday. And Dr. Denbor has filed an action, again in Superior Court, challenging this board's application of 3220.81 paragraph C. Again, we were successful at the Superior Court level. He's filed an appeal, and that brief was filed last week. Oral argument will be set, and I will keep you informed of that.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions from board members for counsel? Good. We have a timed item at 8:45. But I would like to get through several items. The first one that I'd like to knock off here is the consent agenda. Agenda item six is the consent agenda. Board members may remove an item from the consent agenda. Are there any requests to do so? Hearing none, we're going to move forward. Are there any recusals on any items on the consent agenda? Hearing none, we'll move forward. Are there any motions to accept the consent agenda?
Mr. Chairman, I make a motion they be approved.
Thank you. Is there a second?
Seconded.
Motion has been made and seconded. Any further discussion on the consent agenda? Hearing none. All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. The consent agenda is...
Dr. Davis Wilson, can you confirm you're on the line? And Ramona, Dr. Mulatto, are you on the line?
Yes, I am on the line.
And Dr. Davis Wilson? Okay, did you both vote in favor of the motion to approve the consent agreement? Okay, thank you.
Yes.
The consent agenda.
Yes, consent. What did I say?
Agreement. What consent agreement?
Agreement. Oh, okay, sorry.
In fact, now she's here in person.
Okay. I won't shut down anymore.
I know that's coming in. There are several students coming in, too. So
okay.
Thank you. Dr. Malott, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay, I'm going to go through several items in which you are the lead on to see if we can get through these, their applications.
I'm having trouble. I cannot access the website on my office computer. They changed something, and it's just not, and I send an email. And it's not coming up.
And then I'll ask Dr. Flower to help with this.
I got an email a couple of days ago, and the person, Vincent Salgado, sent an email.
Okay,
Dr. Malott, staff will email you.
I don't access any of my materials right now.
Dr. Malott, this is Jennifer. I'm going to have Kathy send you an email right now with the link, so hopefully she's sending it right now.
All right. We have Dr. Burr on the line. Dr. Flower, would you please review this case for us?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
This is agenda item number 12.
Okay, yes. Dr. Burr completed a PsyD, clinical psychology, August 2012, APA-approved program, completed an internship at Southwest Behavioral, which is APIC approved. She did that between August 2011, August 2012. Has two positive references from psychologists, Dr. Bunn and Dr. Livesay. We don't have documentation of postdoctoral work, and so it appears that she could only be recommended for ECCC only. And I make a motion that the board approve that recommendation for ECCC only.
I'm recused from this, if you could. Carry on with.
All in favor, say aye.
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 All opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you very much. Taking back over, if we could go back up to item number 11. This is discussion, consideration, possible action regarding psychologist applications under our universal recognition system. Again, Dr. Flower, until Dr. Malott can get online.
I did get the new login was the previous one had the word user. So I'm good.
Can we take these individually, please?
Yes.
Thank you.
Dr. Malott, Jennifer, Elaine Jepson, please.
I can go ahead and do it if you want me to.
Yes, please.
Okay. So Jennifer Jepson is also applying via universal recognition, and she has been licensed in Alaska, and she currently has an active license in Alaska. One of the things, and so she does meet our requirements, and she is probably good to go. There was one particular candidate, but I don't think she's that candidate that had a...
Okay, let's deal with them one at a time. Is your recommendation that we approve Dr. Jepson for licensure?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Is there a motion to do so?
So moved.
Is there a second?
So moved.
All right, we have a motion and a second in the form of two firsts, but I'll accept that. All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Dr. Malott, Dr. John Robert Colbert.
Okay. Dr. John Robert Colbert is also applying for licensure by universal recognition. One of the questions that I had with Dr. Colbert that I just wanted to bring to the board's attention was, even though we are not looking at it, Dr. Colbert, through his licensure in Vermont, submitted exam scores, you know, which was reported on the Vermont verification, that his score that he received was below what we typically accept. However, through universal recognition, they're not looking at exam scores, and I just wanted to bring it for an FYI to the board. So, but other than that, he does meet the criteria based on the universal recognition policy. But it just troubled me because we have other licensees in Arizona that might have received a similar score and never got licensed because of that.
He did pass the ECCC, was licensed in Vermont.
Yes. He was licensed back in 1989 is when he took the exam.
Oh, whoa.
At that time.
Yeah, that's a different pass score at that time.
Yes.
Yes. So that.
So what we have typically used is the 70%, you know, and it was not at that level, so.
Okay.
So, but I just wanted to bring it to your attention before, I'm not sure there's anything we can do, you know, he meets all the other criteria.
Okay. Dr. Brundage.
Chairman Bohansky and Ms. Galvin. Ms. Galvin, what would be your interpretation?
That he has passed the ECCC and would appear to qualify under universal licensure. You require that, and he did that, whether it's at a different cutoff mark than what is currently accepted, universal licensure is a one way for him to come in and be licensed. It's not like the other universal application that we had a couple weeks ago where the individual did not have a doctoral degree.
I'm fine with it, to be honest, because pass points in those days were not based on the standard scaled score bases, and there was incredible shifts between the states. And Arizona's at that time was a percentage of individuals taking it for the first time who were at the doctoral level. There were literally five pass scores. Okay. So I'm okay. I'll move.
I'll make a motion to approve.
Thank you.
Second.
All in favor, aye.
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 Motion carries. Last one in this category, I'd like to finish. Dr. Kapoor. Dr. Malak.
This person is also applying for licensure. I don't have a problem with her application. Oh, which one are we looking at? Dr. Bohr? No.
Kapoor.
Nigam Kapoor.
Oh, okay. This person is applying for licensure by recognition, and there were no specific issues per se. Their license is several days. They meet our criteria, so I'm moving that we approve.
All right, is there a second?
I second the motion.
Any questions on this one? All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. That takes care of agenda item number 11. We're now going, as it is 8:45, to a timed item. At 8:45, we have agenda item number 7. This is initial discussion, consideration, and possible action relating to initial case review. Again, I want to remind the board members that the purpose of the initial review is for the board to determine whether there may have been a violation of rule or statute. The board may go into executive session on any item on the agenda pursuant to ARS 38431-03A2 to review confidential records and or ARS 38431-03A3 to receive confidential legal advice from the board's attorney. Individuals who wish to speak must request to speak form provided by a board staff member, and you'll be provided an opportunity. Agenda item 7 is complaint number T1901 pertaining to Dr. Davis. Are there any board members here recusing from this case? Seeing none, Dr. Brundage, you're the lead board member for this agenda item. Would you please provide the board with a factual overview of the case?
Thank you, Dr. Bohansky. I am the lead board member on T19001, Pamela Davis ID. Dr. Davis is a certified school psychologist with the Arizona Department of Education. She has also served as a contracted court-appointed advisor, which will be referred to as CAA, for the Maricopa County court system. The complainant CR alleges that Dr. Davis is presenting herself as a child psychologist. CR understands that she is a school psychologist, that she is only allowed to counsel students within the school setting, that she is a CAA, that she works independently out of the executive suite, and included business cards. CR asserts she is marketing herself out of the school setting. The complainant also notified family court regarding her concerns, and the court at that time dismissed the claim. Dr. Davis responded in a timely fashion. She has been a certified school psychologist since May 28, 2010. She has been employed by the Cartwright School District from 2011 to the present time. She has been employed by Maricopa Procurement Office for several years as a CAA. Licensee states that she has met all of the educational requirements for the court advisor and that she is not representing herself as a psychologist. She does have a doctorate and is very clear that she has been clear that she is only functioning in her court appointed advisor. Included in the material of 856 pages, she did include not only her contract with Maricopa County, but also a description of what the court advisor had application to. She has been involved in over 200 cases and denies that she's ever presented herself as a licensed psychologist. Subsequently, on August 21st, the Complaint Screening Committee reviewed the case. The committee expressed concerns that Dr. Davis' business used the word psychological in her business name. Concerns were that this is protected by the board may have confused the public. The committee also asked to complete a file to include informed consent. Additional information was also provided by Dr. Davis on September 9th, which it included the complete file. The services never went beyond her role as a CEA, which she continues to insist. Additional information was again submitted by Dr. Davis on September 30th, stating her business, which was only used to conduct CAA cases, has been closed since September 2018. Possible violations for this that we determined was that of ARS 32-2084 C and 1 for possible use of designation psychology, psychological, or psychologist by a person not licensed pursuant to Chapter 32, Title 19 of the Arizona Revised Statutes, and that leads the public to feel that she is licensed by the state. And at that point, this is a summary of my case.
Thank you, Dr. Brundage. Ms. Poe, is there anyone here to speak on this case?
I believe the complainant is on the line, and the licensee, or the Dr. Davis, is present as well.
Okay. If the complainant would like to make a statement, please don't use your
name.
Please don't use your name, just initials. If you'd like to make a statement, please go ahead. Your time to speak to the board.
Thank you. This is CR, the complainant for this case. Just reiterating kind of what we did in the last meeting is when we attended the CAA appointment appointed by the courts, we were under the impression, myself and my husband and the child, minor child in this case, that Ms. Davis was also a psychologist. After our interaction with Ms. Davis, the first time that we had an interaction with her in person, we were taken aback by the behavior that she had in the appointment, not only from being a CAA, but also because we were under the impression that she was also a psychologist, and the behavior just didn't fit what we were expecting a psychologist to say or behave in the meeting. Ms. Davis also mentioned last time, after I gave my impact statement about being re-traumatized and sanctuary trauma within that CAA meeting, although I do admit that she was functioning as a CAA, which was fine, like she said, but she was also interjecting psychological advice and statements into the meeting, which caused re-traumatization for me, and then traumatizing my husband and the minor child in the case. She responded in saying that she might have said something that made me feel uncomfortable after she had heard my statement several times that she re-traumatized me in those in that particular meeting by her statements and comments to me about an assault that had happened. Unfortunately, that is a belittling and a rationalization for what I had just said, which was I was re-traumatized in meeting with her when I was told that I was responsible for my assault, because if I would have done this, if I would have done that. That's the first part. Within the last 2 weeks, I also went to my stepdaughter's school, which is the minor child in this case, to give her a surprise birthday present for her birthday, and I called her into the office so I could drop off some goodies for her friends. And the first thing that she said to me when she came into the office was, I was so stressed out when I got called into the office because I was afraid Dr. Davis was going to be here again.
So the fact that I am stating that the minor child and myself in this case have been traumatized by the interactions of Ms. Davis and those appointments is clear. And the only reason that I looked her up after these appointments and the behavior that happened during those appointments was because I was under the impression by her business card and by interactions that my husband had had with her on the phone prior that she was also a psychologist. And I thought to myself, my God, if this person's a psychologist, I'm going to just fall out of my chair because of the things that happened. We were shocked and baffled by the statements that were made. And that's when I looked up her license to see if she had a license or what was going on with this individual. And that's when we came to find out that she just had the school license. And then at that point, we were really confused.
Okay, thank you.
That's the end of my statement.
Thank you very much. Are there any board members who have questions for the complainant? Dr. Flowers.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, thank you. I appreciate you being willing to talk to the board. I know you had impressions that she was presenting herself as a psychologist, but at any point, did you see something in writing or did you ask her about her credentials in that regards?
We have the business card that had the Children's Psychological Services on it. And we were, you know, going into those meetings because of that, we were hopeful that we were in good hands, that we were just going to be treated the way that we, you know, I have been around psychologists for the last 5 years, so I kind of know what the basics are for how psychologists work in meetings or whatnot. And then also she made sure that we called her Dr. Davis. My husband flipped up in the meeting and he said, called her Pam, and she was like, no, it's Dr. Davis to you. So the child, you know, has called her Dr. Davis. She's got Dr. Davis everywhere. So it's just with that kind of preface to her name, and then we've got Children's Psychological Services. You add those two together, and I mean, I don't know what else a person would conclude about an individual and their credentials based off of those items.
Okay, so the title of the organization plus that she was saying she was doctor. Okay, thank you.
That's correct, yes.
Are there any other questions from board members?
Dr. Davis is present here today.
We'll go to that as soon as we're set here. Okay, hearing none, thank you very much for attending. We're going to move now to Dr. Davis, if you would like to come forward. And have a seat, please. Thank you very much for appearing here today. A reminder, we are recording our sessions. I'd like you to speak clearly into the mic. Could you introduce yourself to the board, please?
My name is Dr. Pamela Davis. I am a school psychologist in Phoenix, Arizona.
And would you like to make a statement?
Yes.
Please.
This case...
Bohansky, the last person was extremely clear, but I'm having trouble hearing this person. The complainant was very clear.
Yes, thank you. Could you speak into the mic and a little louder, please?
Yes. My name is Dr. Pamela Davis. I am a school psychologist in the city of Arizona. I work for the Cartwright School District. I was also employed as a court-appointed advisor through a contract that I was awarded in 2011. I got this case. It was assigned to me from the court and from the Office of Procurement Services. When the case is assigned to you, you get a copy, and also the complainant in the case, the mother and the father, get a copy of the court order from the court. On the court order, it states that I am a court-appointed advisor. It also states what my role is, will be in the case. I am Dr. Davis because I have a doctorate degree. I graduated from Arkansas University in 2010. So the complainant, who was on the phone, her husband, and the other party, which is the mother, all knew that I was a court-appointed advisor. They received the court order, the same court order I received. That case was sent to me from, it's a random assignment. They have a list of court-appointed advisors, and they randomly just assign you a case, and this case was assigned to me. During my initial interview, before the interview, I give the parents an appointment letter, and in the appointment letter, it says that this is for informational investigative for the court. And right in the appointment letter, it says this is not therapeutic. This is not therapeutic. So they signed the appointment letter stating that they understand what my role and what my position is in the case, which father signed and the mother signed. I interviewed father the first time by himself. The second time the father came back, he brought the daughter to be interviewed, and he also brought CR to have an interview. At that time, she was his fiance or girlfriend at that time. I interviewed her one time. I interviewed the father initially the first time. When he brought the minor child back, I interviewed the minor child. After I interviewed the minor child, father came in, and I re-interviewed him. They made a complaint against me through family court. I had to go to court on November, I believe it was November the 7th, on a motion to have me removed as the court-appointed advisor. I went to the hearing. The judge heard all of the evidence in the case. I've also presented you with the transcript of that hearing. The judge dismissed the motion, and I was not removed from the case. That was in November. I re-interviewed father shortly after that, maybe November, December, and I submitted another report. I have submitted about 900 pages of documents that were presented to me that I had to review for this case. I wrote two separate reports for this case. The initial report and the first motion to have me removed was prior to me submitting my report. It is my belief that father thought I was going to rule against him. Therefore, he wanted to have me removed from the case. The conversations that we had in the office were professional. I have never been unprofessional with father, the girlfriend, or the minor child. I found out from the child's therapist several months later that the child said she cried in my office, which she did. And a lot of children do cry in my office because it's a difficult situation when children are being separated from their parents and feeling like they have to take one side or the other. It's a difficult position for a court-appointed advisor to be in, to make a recommendation. But as I have told the complainants and also the judge told the complainants, I only make recommendations. I do not make rulings. I present the information. I do the home visits. At no time, the minor child did cry in my office, but I saw her two other times, and at no time did she see feel for me. She talked to me. She was smiling. She was laughing. So
I'm going to have Dr. Davis ask you to wrap up.
Okay. My office, I do have a, I did have an office. I have not worked for a court-appointed advisor for over a year now, but it takes you a year to get out because you have court cases that's in process and you still have to go to the hearings and prepare reports. I kept my office only for that reason. I have not utilized the name. The reason that I had the name was on my trade name. When it asked what was the nature of my business, it says court-appointed advisor. There is no documents anywhere that I have solicited that have provided treatment, that have done assessments, or I have presented myself anything other than a court-appointed advisor and a school psychologist.
Thank you very much. Board members, are there questions for Dr. Davis? Dr. Brundage was up first.
Dr. Bohansky. Dr. Davis, thank you for being here. My guess is that you have provided a great deal of materials, which I'm sure we've all had the opportunity to read, and I know that you've been very responsive in our request for additional information. What have you learned by this process?
Well, one thing is the use of psychological services. Now, I do understand that we are governed by rules and regulations, and once I was apprised to this, I closed that name down. The business was already closed, and I closed that name down. The trademark, I canceled the trademark. My office was only open for me to finish my cases, and my lease was coming to an end, and the office is closed, and I'm moving out of the office because I don't have a need for the office. So I did learn that being a court-appointed advisor is a very difficult job. I've done over 400 cases. I have never had a complaint like this. I've been to court on this complaint. I submitted all the documents. I don't know if there's anything else I can do to prove that my role in this case was just court-appointed advisor. I never offered treatment, therapy. The minor child had a therapist. What I have learned is to make sure that before I sign on to a name that there is no rules or regulations that say I should not. But this complainant made this report even after I went to court, and she knew at that time that I was a school psychologist. I don't have a sign saying I'm a licensed psychologist. I would not jeopardize. I went to school for 10 years to get this degree. I worked very hard. I worked two jobs to get this degree. I would not jeopardize my career for one case to say I was a licensed psychologist. It's just not ethical, and I wouldn't do it.
Thank you.
Dr. Myra.
Dr. Davis, thank you.
Yes.
My understanding from the records is that you met with the child once in a school setting.
Yes.
Was that the same school that you work as a school psychologist?
No, that's her school.
Okay, thank you.
Dr. Flower.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I saw within the documentation that you submitted there was a request for cancellation of the trade name.
Yes.
And it didn't appear to be signed and dated or processed. Is that still pending?
From my understanding, it's done. I did it online. I went down there, and he told me I can do it online, so I did it online.
Okay, because I guess I don't like to say I'm old, but old school. I'm used to seeing stamps and signatures.
Yeah, I did it online.
Okay. And then within the court hearing, their court hearings are not a whole lot of fun, and a lot of questions are asked, but at one point, the prosecutor person.
Yes.
You know, that was kind of questioning whether you should be doing this and that and the other. Earlier in the transcript, you said that you were getting licensed as a psychologist.
No, I was in the process.
Of getting
one. At the time that this case came about, I was in the process of working with Kathy to get all my documents in, and then Argus Street closed. So then my documents was in a warehouse, and I had to wait to find out, and they ended up in Atlanta, Georgia. So I just was able to get my documents August. However, when this complaint came, I just stopped because this needs to be handled before I move forward on anything else.
Okay, but yeah, so like priorities and...
Right.
Okay, it says that, and then at one point... Later, it says, you know, the prosecutor, whatever, who was questioning you, I'm sure it wasn't a prosecutor, wasn't
no,
a criminal
it's
case.
The father's attorney.
Anyway, he said, you're currently not a psychologist, correct? And then you said, I'm a psychologist. and then he started saying, you're a, and then says it has an S. Maybe he's going to say school psychologist, and then your response was, you have a doctorate degree in psychology. But then later in the transcript, you said you're a school psychologist.
Yes.
So can you kind of walk me through what occurred there?
Right. So the question that he was asking me is, you are not a licensed psychologist. And I said, yes, I am not a licensed psychologist. I am a certified school psychologist. But the problem for me is that they knew this from the beginning. When they signed on to the case, they knew that I was a court-appointed advisor. There's nowhere that says I need to be a psychologist to do a court-appointed advisor's job. As a court-appointed advisor, you don't need a master's degree. So they knew from the beginning when the court signed me on that I was a court-appointed advisor. Now, I happen to be a school psychologist, but I didn't have to be a school psychologist. I could have been just a social worker. You know, most of the, it's a maybe one other the young lady that was like in the same process as me, and she's a school psychologist. But everybody else is social workers. So they knew going in from the beginning that I was not a licensed psychologist, because a licensed psychologist would not work as a court-appointed advisor. They would work as a forensic evaluator.
Okay, strictly speaking, I think psychologists could do both.
You know, yeah, they could.
That's a different issue. But,
but not for this amount of work.
I did say later on in the testimony and the court transcripts that the judge or whoever said her credentials are not an issue here. And
yes.
So the line of questioning was stopped, that indeed you were a court-appointed attorney, excuse me, advisor. You didn't become an attorney. And that eventually the motion that they wanted to remove you was denied.
Yes,
so it was denied. It was resolved. Thank you.
Just for the record, can we, Dr. Flowers, are you referencing page 35 of the documentation, which is page 27 of the transcript?
It is our PDF 35.
Okay. Yeah. Where he's, all right,
yeah,
thank you.
I think it sounds as if he was trying to trap you in semantics, you know, but they are important semantics, you know, you're
yes,
not
they
a
are.
License.
And I take this very seriously.
And, you know, and I do know in the school system, school psychologists answer the phone if there's a psychologist. It does happen because they're, it's protected. But I guess, but okay, I didn't want to beat this to death, but just wanted to bring that out. It sounded like you are aware, and in that hearing it was touched on, but it became in a way irrelevant because you didn't need that credential anyway. But it sounds like you do know the difference and the importance of labels and titles. So
I do, yes.
That's good.
I do, sir.
I'm ready to call the question.
Yeah, I've got a question before I do that. Dr. Davis, the name of your business was?
Children's Psychological Services.
Children's Psychological Services.
Yes.
Is the name of your business?
Yes. Well, was. It's not anymore because I've closed it and closed the trade name.
You think it's reasonable if somebody goes to someone whose business is Children's Psychological Services that they would assume that's a psychologist?
It could be, but they knew.
Reasonably?
Reasonably, they knew. They were.
I'm not talking about them. I'm talking about somebody else who sees the name Children's Psychological Services out in the general public and calls up your office for services for their children.
No, my business was not advertised like that. The only business that I did was for court-appointed advisors. There's no...
So you didn't name your business Court-Appointed Advisor Services. You named your business Children's Psychological Services.
I did.
That's misrepresentation.
Okay.
You have a psychology certification that works under the auspices of the State Department of Education when you are employed by a school district. And you provide psychological services for a school district. And in that scope, you are a psychologist.
Yes.
But to put your name on a shingle and hang it up and say Children's Psychological Services, you're providing school psych services in a private office?
No.
So you're providing no psychological services in a private office?
Well.
Because you're not licensed to provide psychological services in a private office. Is that not true?
That is true.
But you put the name up as if you were.
No, that's not why I put the name up.
I guess that's the question we have here today. Is there misrepresentation to the general public, whom we, as board members, are appointed to protect from people misrepresenting psychological services to the community?
I understand.
Does that make sense to you?
I understand.
Okay. Are there further questions? Dr. Malott, you had a motion?
She called the question.
There's no motion.
No, we haven't discussed it.
Okay. Then, are there further questions?
Yeah.
Dr. Brundage, would you start deliberation? Thank you very much, Dr. Davis, for coming and attending. The board will now go into deliberation.
In reviewing this case, it appears highly conflicted. I believe that the material that we have, which is almost 900 pages, is indicative of that. I am aware that there is confusion about the psychological, and it's interesting because psychotherapist is okay, psychological and some of those things are not okay. I believe that Dr. Davis responded quickly to our concerns. I think that, again, the clarification about that psychological, I don't think that would be a mistake that you would use again. And
never.
I think that at this point, I clearly looked at the court-appointed advisor description, which is at page 41 of 856. And I also looked at the appointment letter on page 150 of 856. And at no time did I see that you had claimed to be a licensed psychologist. This gets tricky, and I think that Dr. Bohansky's concerns are accurate. And yet I also know that once it was brought to your attention, you rapidly responded and tried to make it better. So I guess I would like to hear from other people, but I believe that you've acted in good faith and the clarification has been there, and would like to hear from others.
Dr. Myers.
To me, this is pretty clear cut. She used a term that's protected, and there is potential harm to the claimant. Regardless of the motives for that claim, there's some potential concern there. This is a violation of the law.
This is Dr. Malott. We are dealing with a case that is a cease and desist. In the past, when we have noticed people who have used the term inappropriately, we have asked them to cease and desist. Dr. Davis, she immediately went, filed a motion to remove the title from her agency, which used the word psychological. She has ceased, and in our past experience, we have dismissed these cases. So I'm going to go ahead and make a motion that we dismiss. Thank you.
I would second that.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? I'm going to provide further discussion. There's a history of dismissing when people respond, and I appreciate that. And that is the proper thing, I guess, in this case to do. But it raises a question for me with someone who has admitted they're in process of applying to licensure to this board as to the judgment that they've demonstrated to this board already and preparedness to be a psychologist. The program at Argosy teaches people very clearly the distinction in ethics. And to graduate and be a fresh, excited,
caring psychologist about to go out into the world and get licensed, you should be aware of the ethical limitations, the rules and statutes of this board that you're applying to become a member of. That was not the case. A business was formed with a misrepresenting title, suggesting services to our most vulnerable, the children of our community. And I find the judgment demonstrated to be of significant concern. So I'll shut up and call the question. Do we need a roll call vote, Council?
Yes, please.
Ms. Poe, if you would, please.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Dr. Bohansky?
No.
Dr. Davis-Wilson?
Yes.
Dr. Brundage?
Yes.
Dr. Meyer?
No.
Dr. Malott?
Yes.
Dr. Flowers?
Yes.
Dr. Davy?
Yes.
We have 5 yeses, 2 noes. Motion carries.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Dr. Davis, for appearing and helping to clarify. Motion is carried, and we will move on.
It's dismissed.
Yep.
Thank you.
The worst is over.
Thank you, sir.
I'm going to jump to, we have our next timed item coming up in about 40 minutes, so I'm going to try to get through some of the...
Mr. Chairman, I believe for agenda item number 22, Dr. Gable, he was on the line when we started the meeting. I'm not sure if he's still on the line. Dr. Gable, are you still on the line?
Yes, I am.
All right, let's move to 22. Agenda item number 22, discussion, consideration, possible action regarding renewal of Dr. Gable's licensure. He is currently living out of state, and Ms. Poe, can you bring the board up on this situation?
Yes, Mr. Chairman and members of the board. On September 27, 2019, the board office received Dr. Gable's 2019 psychologist application for licensure renewal. Dr. Gable answered yes to questions number 1.7 and 1.8 of the digital application, which asks, since the last license period, have you relinquished responsibilities, resigned a position, or been terminated while a complaint against you was being investigated or adjudicated? And since the last license period, have you resigned or been terminated from a professional organization, hospital staff, the military, or provider panel, or surrendered a license while a complaint against you was being investigated or adjudicated? Dr. Gable answered yes to both of those and included a detailed explanation and timeline of the events, as well as copies of official memorandums from the Department of the Army regarding the matter. Dr. Gable's renewal has not been processed. Since Dr. Gable is an employee of the federal government, he did express concern to board staff that if the renewal of his license is placed on hold past his October 31st, 2019 expiration date, he will be unable to continue to practice for the federal government until his license renewal has been processed. Board staff is requesting direction from the board. All documentation has been provided for your review. Dr. Gable is on the line, and this concludes my summary of the matter.
Thank you very much. Dr. Gable, would you like to make a statement?
Yeah, and mainly just wanted to be available if you guys had any questions. I'm honestly not quite sure what more to say beyond that. This seems like a scenario where the department that I was previously working for violated an Army regulation and used that as an occasion to reprise against me. And then that sort of played out. And then ultimately my credentials are reinstated, but not before they terminated me.
Okay, thank you, sir. Board members, do we have questions for Doctor? Dr. Brundage.
Dr. Gable, I'm confused because I know that the concerns that you were terminated are quite severe, and yet you continue to work for the federal government. So explain to me exactly how this whole process has gone. I did note that on your reapplication, you hadn't really indicated what was happening.
I'm not quite sure I heard everything that you said. Could you restate that?
I guess I'm confused. Can you, in your own words, describe this whole process in understanding that if indeed you were terminated from one position, you're currently working for the federal government. So how does that work, that you can be terminated from the military and yet continue to work for the federal government?
I was pretty transparent about what happened with my next the job where I'm at right now, and they didn't really have any concerns about it. Would you like me to go into more detail about what happened?
Yes, please.
Yes.
Okay. So I administered brief psychological testing in my role as a GS-13 government civilian. I was evaluating a soldier, administered personality testing. After I got consultation with the White House medical team, who explicitly told me that they were looking for elevations on validity scales or clinical scales. The patient was not very transparent. The validity scales were on first round testing were through the roof, and then gave him a chance to retest per the guidance of the White House psychologist. This time, the validity scales were at the normal limit. Patient had an elevation on one of the clinical scales. Patient reports he's doing fine. So I've got a bit of a discrepancy here. Ordinarily, I wouldn't make too much of the testing, but I've been given specific guidance about what the requesting agency is wanting, so it kind of puts me in a tough spot. So I acknowledge the findings, diagnose the patient with an occupational problem, and you know, to my thinking, the patient's still able to, the soldier is still able to carry on as per usual in his current role. The soldier was kind of, you know, concerned about that, complained about it. And this is where things start to get a little weird. Typically, if there's a patient complaint, my experience is that, you know, supervisor comes and talks to me about this. We figure out if there's something that needs to change and go from there. Instead, what happens is they just went ahead and cleared my whole patient schedule without telling me about it. And I show up to the clinic and discover that my caseload has been completely cleared. This is in the context of all of my performance evaluations being highly positive. There's been no concerns brought up about this before. This is happening about a year and a half into my time at this place of duty. So all of this came as quite a surprise. After, you know, previously getting a lot of really good feedback about my performance, and things just kind of unraveled from there. As it turns out, and I don't know how relevant this is, but a little context, I became aware that another provider in the clinic was violating patient privacy by looking into my records and try to figure out what my religion was, which is a little unsettling. So when I brought up my concerns, that wasn't taken too well. It looks like the hospital was trying to cover up a mistake, and that's sort of how things played out from there. Ultimately, I was reinstated. I got reinstated with the provision that I do a period of monitoring evaluation. They hadn't actually done the initial focused professional practice evaluation, as I would typically expect. And so this would have been the time to do that belatedly. But then they went ahead and issued me a termination notice before they gave me the monitoring evaluation plan, I think. I have to go back and look at the specific timeline. I wasn't really given a chance to actually complete the monitoring, the period of M&E, and then they terminated me anyway, using that as a justification for firing me, which that's, you know, unfortunate. And then after I was terminated, only then was I served the notice that they were going to restrict my credentials because I'd failed to complete the monitoring evaluation, even though I hadn't been given a chance to complete it. So I was able to, with the help of effective legal representation, to appeal that, and my credentials were reinstated.
Thank you.
Dr. Flower, please.
Yes. I have also worked with the federal government as a psychologist. From looking at the documentation, it appears that the soldier in question and maybe another one didn't like the recommendations you gave, and they complained.
Correct.
And correct. And then it's like, well, he's not pleasing patients, so a series of things were done. And then since you're in a probationary status, they don't need a whole lot, or they need some to justify termination, but nothing as if you were permanent. And you appealed it all, and then essentially they said, final things, we shouldn't have done it in the first place. You're reinstated. Of course, you weren't there anymore, but credentialing-wise, it makes a huge difference. And you've obtained further federal employment since then as a psychologist?
Correct. Loma Linda VA in Southern California.
Okay. Yeah, and from what I gather, too, looking at the documentation, is the soldiers in question were going for like a high visibility type of a role. They weren't what I call generic soldiers doing regular soldier duties. They were going to be in a position of high trust and high visibility, and so I guess that's one reason for your interpretations.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm sorry, if I might elaborate on that, the expectation, but this is the White House that we're talking about. The expectation is that they're on the road upwards of 200 days out of the year. If they have behavioral health problems, they need to bring themselves in. So transparency is paramount. And that's precisely what I wasn't seeing in this evaluation. Soldiers telling me he's doing fine. The testing data shows otherwise. And, you know, is he probably fine for other military duties? Yes, probably. You know, and so I didn't feel like I had enough to limit his duty for ordinary Army assignments, but this is the White House we're talking about.
Yeah, if you make mistakes as a regular kind of soldier, it's not going to be on all the news media.
Exactly.
So I think that was part of where you're coming from. But okay, the fact that you're working still for the federal government seems like a good indication. Hope it goes well.
Okay. Is there any further questions for Dr. Gill? Is there a motion? And then
I'd move that we proceed with the renewal process.
Grant the renewal?
Yes. Is there a second?
I second.
We have a motion to proceed with renewing this application. And a second. Any further discussion? Hearing none. All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, like sign. Motion carries. Please move forward with the completion of this renewal application. And we will ourselves move on. Agenda item number 13. This is discussion, consideration, possible action regarding application for license by waiver from Dr. Barnicello. Dr. Malott.
Yes, this is Dr. Malott, and I will do a review of Dr. Barnicello's application for licensure. Dr. Bonicello was reduced by teacher. Prior to Dr. Bonicello going through the program to become a psychologist, he had a master's degree in the state of Texas in school psychology. And in the state of Texas, you are issued a license through the Board of Psychological Examiners, the equivalent board. And it's a limited license, it's a school specialist license. Dr. Bonicello meets all the requirements for licensure, with the exception of that his license, his limited school psychology license, was terminated by the Board of Psychological Examiners in Texas, or the Texas State Board of Examiners. The reason for the termination, which Dr. Bonicello explained in his application and provided documentation, which was substantiated by the letter from the Texas Board, was Dr. Bonicello had already moved to New Mexico to work on his doctoral degree. He was asked to, he missed the renewal notice of renewing his school psychology license. And since he was kind of moving on, he had already moved, he did not get the notice. By the time he received the notice, the time had passed and he had to submit continuing ed credits to prove that he was eligible for licensure. Since he moved, they gave him an option to either appear before the board or terminate his license. He decided to go ahead and terminate that license without really understanding the consequences, and the board terminated his license with, you know, with kind of a consent agreement, termination of license. He does report that, you know, and again, you know, it was a kind of a plea agreement that was made before Dr. Bonicello and the Texas State Board. We didn't see any other evidence of, you know, wrongdoing and, you know, a process issue. So my question really was, I don't know if Dr. Bonicello is present. Is he present?
I am present, yes.
Oh, yes. And so, Dr. Bonicello, we really wanted you to be present. We understand the circumstances and we appreciate your candor in revealing all of the information. But it is critical, and I'm going to make this assumption and you can correct me if I'm wrong. It is critical that when you do move, we have state statutes in Arizona, and it's important to keep up with it, that you inform the board of change of address. To my understanding, or the way I read the materials, it appears that there was not a timely notification of the change of address. Because if you were in a grad program, you obviously had graduate courses that could have been used for continuing education. So that should not have been an issue. But by the time you received the letter, you know, because it was probably forwarded, it was late. And so we just wanted to make sure that that does not happen again, you know, if you do get licensed by this board. And so we want to stress upon you that all of those things, you know, timely notification to the board is extremely important moving forward. So that was one of the main reasons why we asked that you be present as we review your license for a psychologist. So. Dr. Flowers, you were present too during that discussion, and I'm not sure if you have any additional questions or comments.
Well, I'm underscoring the same things. Before I served on this board, I didn't really understand what it meant to surrender a license. I certainly do now. I should have before, but it looks as if it's similar to getting it revoked. And so just for the issue of CEUs, that's a pretty severe price. And so
It goes to the National Practitioner Data Bank, where it looks like you've been revoked.
Yes.
And I actually did not get reported to the National Data Bank.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's lucky. But, you know, it can be assumed that something very dire happened, which it doesn't appear that it did in this case. But I guess the issue is, you know, getting licensed to make sure you go by the CEUs and so forth here, as well as other rules. But I thank you for participating.
Okay. Is there any other discussion, questions? Is there a motion?
I move to approve the application, and I also, yeah.
We have a motion to approve. Is there a second? Dr. Myers, a second. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor?
Yeah, and again, oh, one second. I do have one more point to make before we take a vote. And I forgot it already, so go ahead to the vote.
All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you very much. Let's go to agenda item number 14.
I just want to thank Dr. Barnicella for coming because he really wanted to give him that message on the CDs and
excellent.
To the board. So thank you, Dr. Barnicella.
And we'll try to get through one or two of these, have a quick comfort break, and then do our next timed item. So agenda item number 14. Discussion, consideration, possible action regarding psychologist application. Sit for the EPPP from Dr. Prosser. Dr. Flowers?
Let me pull that up. Yes, Dr. Prosser has applied for EPPP and licensure. She is currently an Arizona school psychologist. She completed a PhD from NAU in May 2015 in school psychology. At that time, the program was not APA accredited, but in looking at the coursework, it appears she has enough hours in the core program requirements. She completed an internship at Cottonwood Oak Creek School, July 2009 to May 2010, and 1,520 hours. There was enough client contact and enough individual supervision. Was not an APA or APIC member. However, the internship training plan appeared to be adequate. Moving on, the postdoctoral work was done at the same location, August 2015 to May 2016, 1,500 hours, and there again appeared to be adequate contact and supervision, and also an adequate training plan. Letters of recommendation, positive, both from Dr. Worsham, Arizona psychologist, and Dr. Michael Malott, an Arizona psychologist. And I make a motion that the application for taking the EPPP and licensure upon successful completion of the EPPP and applicable fees be approved.
I second that motion.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none.
I am recused from the case.
Thank you. Dr. Malott is noted as recused. All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. Thank you, Council, for counting the quorum so that the action was official with the recusal. Saying that, I'd like to sneak in one more. Dr. Malott, if you could, number 15, we have consideration possible action regarding psychologist application for exam and licensure from Dr. Lavin.
Dr. Lavin is applying for a psychologist. She initially had her degree in cognitive psychology. She then went back to Fielding Graduate University and got a re-specialization. The staff was not sure about the accreditation status, since Fielding does have an accredited clinical psych program. However, to the best of my research and knowledge, re-specializations are not part of the APA accreditation process. So the advice that I gave to both staff was that the biggest difference, as you all know, between an APA accredited and a non-APA in terms of our review process is that students who graduate from an APA approved program do not have to include coursework that they completed as part of the program. Students who graduate from an APA do not have to include, but if they graduate from a non-APA, they do have to include the coursework. I advise staff that Dr. Lavin complete the coursework requirement, so the coursework requirement was complete. To the best of my knowledge, she meets the coursework requirement for licensure. She had at least three credits, equivalent of three semester credits in all of the core areas required for licensure. He has the re-specialization degree, which we have seen before this board, though initial degree was in an area. He completed 2009-hour internship at the West Valley Family Development Center. It appears to meet the requirements in terms of supervision, in terms of psychologist, and you know, it has all the different areas of training, and it was signed by the student and the supervisor. He also did a postdoc at the Arizona Neuropsychological Services in Chandler, Arizona. That too appears to meet the requirements in terms of supervision and direct client contact hours. And she has a postdoctoral training agreement, which is signed by the supervisor, the primary supervisor, and the resident. And she has references that appear to be appropriate. So I move that we approve her application for licensure upon passing the exam.
Is there a second?
I second the motion.
We have a motion and a second by Dr. Flowers. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor, aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you very much. I'm going to call a comfort break. Please be sure that you're back in the seats by 10 o'clock. We have a timed item, initial case review, and we will proceed from there. Thank you. We could come back to order again, please. We're back. We have a timed item at 10 o'clock. This is a agenda item number 8, discussion, consideration, possible action relating to initial case review. I want to again remind the board members that the purpose of the initial case review is for the board to determine whether there may be a violation of rule or statute. Agenda item number 8 is complaint number T-1902 pertaining to an April Tanner. Are there any board members who are recusing from this case? Seeing none, we'll proceed. Dr. Flowers, you're the lead board member for this agenda item. Would you please provide the board with a factual overview of this case?
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm the lead board member for the case and will provide a brief factual overview. A.V. said that she moved to Arizona. A.V. is the complainant. She moved to Arizona to be near specialists for medical treatment regarding a chronic condition. A.V.'s physician referred her to see a psychiatrist, and so A.V. looked for somebody who would be able to help her. A.V. contacted Ms. Tanner and attended one session with her. She said that Ms. Tanner talked about herself for the majority of the session. After the session, A.V. said that Ms. Tanner contacted her excessively. Because of this, A.V. told Ms. Tanner that she would not return, as she felt Ms. Tanner had ulterior motives, since she kept pressuring A.V. to send money to her. A.V. believes that Ms. Tanner should not be a counselor because she preys on individuals in vulnerable positions for her own gain. A.V. said that she's reluctant to see another counselor because Ms. Tanner seemed more focused on what she could get for herself rather than to provide good counseling. In the response from Ms. Tanner, she disputed the alleged complaint. She said that that A.V. had avoided paying a balance for life coaching services. Ms. Tanner said that she's CEO of a company that provides life coaching services. She said that her website makes it clear that she's not licensed and that she provides wellness life coaching services only. She said that clients who need a level of care beyond life coaching are referred to colleagues and others who provide psychological services and counseling services. She said that she's not in violation of ARS 32-2084 because she's not practicing psychology, only life coaching. She said that A.V. canceled an appointment less than 48 hours before the scheduled appointment and was charged an agreed-upon cancellation fee. Ms. Tanner said that A.V. is now trying to get out of paying her bill. On August 21st, 2019. This went before the Complaint Screening Committee. The Case Screening Committee expressed concern that Ms. Tanner was possibly advertising and providing psychological services and psychotherapy. The committee also expressed concern that Ms. Tanner was not present for the meeting. And because of that, the Case Screening Committee forwarded the complaint for possible violations of ARS 32-2084-C1 for possible use of the designation psychology, psychological, or psychologist by a person not licensed to pursuant to Chapter 13, Title 19 of ARS 32-2084-C2 for possible use of any combination of words, initials, and symbols that leads the public to believe that the person is licensed to practice in psychology in this state by a person not licensed pursuant to Chapter 32, Title 19 of ARS. On September 23, 2019, the board office received information from Ms. Tanner. She said that Footsteps to Serenity is no longer an active business and has closed its doors. She said that as a life coach, she is not required to keep client files and does not have and take forms, stream of plans, session notes, referrals, or discharge documentation. She said that AV has also filed complaints with the Better Business Bureau and with the Board of Behavioral Health Examiners. This completes my overview of the case.
Thank you very much, Dr. Flower. Ms. Poe, is anyone requested to speak?
I don't believe so, Mr. Chairman.
Check on the phone. AB, are you available online?
I am available.
Would you like to make a statement?
Yes, I would. First of all, when I initially contacted Ms. Tanner, it was through a Google search for a psychologist in my area. That led me to a profile on Psychology Today. A profile was explicit in all of the treatments that included a lot of psychological treatments that would be performed by a licensed practitioner. Even the name of the business was misleading. So after looking at the Psychology Today profile, the name of the business was Steps to Serenity and Psychological Services. It was my assumption that she was a psychologist. Not only that, when I had the initial phone consult with Ms. Tanner, I told her, and also in the meeting, I gave her documentation from my treating specialist that I had a referral for a psychiatrist. During the session, it is correct, she spent the majority of the session speaking about herself and her own personal issues. However, she also wrote down two medications that she was suggesting that I take. She said, look into these medications. This one will do this. This one will do that. Because I also let her know that I was having issues sleeping. It wasn't that I relocated to Arizona just to get treatment. I had experienced multiple traumas, which I disclosed to Ms. Tanner. So finding a practitioner who can help walk me through my process of healing was very much important. I did not, I gave Ms. Tanner, being pressured by Ms. Tanner and some of her behaviors began to set off red flags for me. After being pressured by Ms. Tanner to contact people, my friends, and my support system, also she called me at 7 o'clock in the evening and told me to go to a church to get them to give me funds to pay her. After, you know, experiencing all of these pressures, inappropriate texts, things of the sort, I just told her well in advance of 48 hours, I just said, you know, this isn't a good time for me to pursue services. So she actually canceled the contract. She canceled the contract, which in my opinion was extremely predatory in the sense that if you sign the contract, you're obligated to continue to see her for sessions. And if she breaches the contract or cancels it, she charges extra $300 with interest. I think it's like 25 cents that's accruing on it. This is completely predatory. I had paid her $150 for that session. So she was seeking to get a total of $450 plus interest from me after she breached and canceled the contract. I reached out to the Better Business Bureau for help because she was advertising on her website that she was certified by the Better Business Bureau. And she basically disclosed information to the Better Business Bureau that was confidential about my situation and said that I was filing the complaint because I had a mental issue, a mental problem, which added insult to injury after all of this. It was very traumatic dealing with Ms. Tanner. And I just wanted to let someone know what was happening because I remember I was in a place when all of this happened and I was suicidal, I was struggling, and I thought to myself, if she's done this to me, it's happened to someone else, and I don't want someone to commit suicide or hurt themselves because they're seeking help and someone's pretending to be something that they're not. So she misrepresented in many forms, not only advertising, but through what she said, through giving me medication suggestions, which I submitted all of that evidence, through her paperwork says psychological services. Every interaction with her, she advertised that she was a psychologist, even amplified to a psychiatrist with the medication suggestions. So I just would like the board to consider that this was fraudulent, it was traumatic, and having someone pressure you for money or have you sign contracts that are predatory, then they cancel those contracts and try to make you obligated to give them more money is not okay, especially when you're struggling and you're fighting for your life. And I have a son that I'm taking care of by myself in this condition. So this interaction with Ms. Tanner was very traumatic. I'm very cautious of finding another counselor. However, I am from now on moving forward with any type of medical professional. I am checking licenses and things like that. So I've done counseling in the past, and I've never had anyone misrepresent that they were licensed or something other than what they were. So this experience was very life-changing for them.
Thank you very much for your statement. Are there questions for the complainant from any board members? Dr. Flower.
Yes, thank you very much for being on the line so we can ask questions and you can participate. Looking through the documentation, there's something about like the informed consent for psychotherapy. Within that, was there any indication of how many sessions, if any, you agreed to attend?
No, there was no agreement on how many sessions that I was going to attend. Normally, when I've had counseling in the past, I will attend the first session. If we feel like it's a good fit, you know, we'll move forward with a treatment plan and things like that. With Ms. Tanner, that never happened because she was spending the session speaking about herself. It was just a very weird experience. So, no, there were no agreed upon number of sessions. In fact, I told her, I don't think that this is a good time for me to do this because I need to set up childcare and I need help with my son, whereas she continued to pressure me, well, you can bring him in here, and, you know, it's fine, you know. There was no agreement on my end for how many number of sessions.
And from what I gather, there was no treatment plan. Is that correct?
No treatment plan. That is correct.
Did she indicate or did you ask what kind of services she planned to give you?
Well, that was in the initial phone consult. I told her that I had gotten a referral from my specialist and I needed help for multiple trauma. So I kind of went into what I needed. And she said, yes, absolutely, that's what I do. you know, and you should come in soon. You really need help, you know. I just don't want you to be by yourself, you know. So it was a lot of pressure. And at that time, I was extremely vulnerable. And instead of me following my gut and just continuing to kind of shop around, because I only called to just get information, I didn't want to commit to anything at that time, but she said, no, bring your son in. It's fine. I have a little office here, you know. So it was just a lot of pressure, and I went along with it, and I shouldn't have. So, in the initial consult, I told her exactly what was needed, the trauma that I had experienced, and she said that she definitely can help with that, and that's what she does. And there's no way, if she never said she was a life coach or anything, there's no way I would have gone to a life coach for this level of trauma, especially, you know, what I've gone through. And I know I cannot disclose that information to the board, but if I could, anyone with any common sense would not go to someone unlicensed who's a life coach for this level of trauma. So if I had known that, I would not have ever proceeded with Ms. Tanner.
Are efforts still being made to collect money from you?
She sent, after I told her, she emailed me, and after she canceled the contract, she emailed me and said she was sending it to a collection agency because I told her I was not paying for it. I think I provided all of that documentation to you guys. After that, I asked her to stop emailing me. Once I asked her to stop emailing me, she sent me three more emails after that. She later told the Better Business Bureau in the complaint that I was harassing her, when indeed I had not harassed her. I was stopping all contact, and I asked her to not contact me, but she continued to contact me and sent some collection agency. I don't even know if it's legitimate, but it was a collection agency that emailed me, and then I emailed them back after her three emails, and I said, I don't owe this. She perpetrated a fraud. Contracting fraudulent, but she's not licensed. So after that, I didn't get any contact from this collection agency after that. So she says I owe her this money after she canceled the contract.
Okay, so at least at this point, the credit place has not gone after you trying to get money, but you don't really know if it's over at this point.
I don't.
Okay.
I absolutely don't know, but she told the Better Business Bureau that I owe her money, and I don't. In fact, she owes me money. I've wasted $150. And, you know, as I call around and I'm trying to find a trauma specialist, I mean, licensed professionals charge less than that. So, I mean, that just kind of goes along with, you know, her storyline of she's licensed, she's a psychologist, things like that. I don't believe ever a life coach would charge $150 when licensed professionals charge that much or less.
Okay, thank you very much.
Other questions of the complainant? Thank you very much. Is the April Tanner here? Would you like to come forward, please, and have a seat? I'd like you to introduce yourself to the board.
I'm April Tanner.
Could you speak into the microphone very clearly? We record these, and we also have members online so they can hear you. Would you like to make a statement?
Yes. The lady on the phone had come to me for an intake session to find out her needs. I engaged in motivational interviewing with her. Everything on my advertisement states that I'm a life coach. Everything on my About Me page states I am not licensed. I provide resources to individuals. I have a colleague two doors down when I did have my office who is a doctor in psychology, Dr. Sakari, who takes referrals from me. So in the motivational interviewing, I find out individuals' needs and refer them out as needed if I cannot abide to their needs. But I provide life coaching, and I'm the life coaching part of what was my business. And in the initial session I had with her to find out her needs, it was clear that she needed resources. She was seeking resources. And in doing that, I was providing resources to her. Along with motivational interviewing, it involves asking, what medications have you been on? What past treatment have you had? Tell me about your history. You know, what would you like to share with me? And she wanted someone who can relate with her on certain areas. She explained that she was having financial difficulty, came from a relationship that, you know, had affected her. So I was giving her resources along the way based off of her request. And then I had planned to refer her to Dr. Sakari, which is two doors down from where my office was, because she has a PhD and she could be able to provide her with better resources and services, but we never got to that level. She had scheduled a second session after her intake, and within less than 48 hours prior to the intake, she did not. She ended up canceling services, saying she didn't want services and she couldn't meet the session because she couldn't afford it. And that's how it ended. And then I ended up getting Better Business Bureau referral, which I advised them that she was trying to get funds. And they had closed the case, and I have that with me. And then she had contacted y'all and filed with y'all. And then she filed with the Board of Behavioral Health Examiners, and everything says I'm not licensed.
Okay. Are there any questions from board members for Ms. Tanner? Dr. Flower.
Yes, I have several questions. The complainant sent us like a string of email messages between the two of you. Mm-hmm. And it appears that she canceled the appointment 4 days before the appointment, and not within 48 hours. So I was confused as to why there'd be the charge. And she didn't say, you know, I don't know that there was an agreement that she is going to see you for several months and a number of sessions. So unclear how that would be a breach of contract when there is no ongoing commitment to receive services. Can you comment on that?
Sure. In life coaching, the goal is to help people reach their goals. So we flow with them until they're ready to cancel or they've reached their goals. And it could be work-related, career-related. It could be, you know, coping skill-related. There are so many different avenues in life coaching. It's just to help people reach their goals. She had texted me the day before her session and let me know that she could not afford her session. And that's why she was only... She paid for the initial session, and then she canceled within 24 hours prior to the session. She was trying to get funds to pay for the next session and having difficulty with it, and trying to give her resources to help her out and meet the needs that she needs was my goal.
Yeah, but the documentation we have that she sent indicates that it was like 4 days prior to the appointment she said she couldn't make it.
She was letting me know that she could not afford it.
And she was canceling as well.
Okay.
So.
And she has not been billed for future sessions.
Okay, but she received a bill for like $300. Excuse me, $400 or thereabouts. And I saw what you said to Better Business Bureau about the situation. Mm-hmm. Within that, there is a disclosure of information about what she told you that's personal. And I'm wondering how that is in compliance with privacy policies.
Her response to the Better Business Bureau was everything that she had shared about her personal business, the same as with you guys. And in response to that, I had to let the Better Business Bureau know that her financial obligations and her matter is the reason that she is coming after me. It's not.
Well, but I guess beyond that, you also disclosed some of her issues, not just financial. and so that's concerning. Within, like, Psychology Today profile, it indicates issues that you handle. It says your specialties are family conflict, mood disorders, life coaching is there, as you mentioned, but then issues, I won't read them all, there are quite a few, but alcohol abuse, Alzheimer's, Asperger's syndrome, autism, bipolar disorder, depression, developmental disorders, medical detox, medication management, obsessive compulsive disorder, self-harming, sexual abuse, substance abuse, suicidal ideation, testing and evaluation, trauma and PTSD, traumatic brain injury, dissociative disorders. So I don't really see those as in the realm for a life coach.
Right. I do a referral service. So I provide resources to the community. A life coach, my goal is to help others find the resources they need. If I cannot help with coping skills, de-escalation, being a good support system for them, then I help refer them out to someone who can better meet their needs, like Dr. Sakari.
Right. So what you're saying is these are, they're not things that you provide, but you know about and you can refer?
Right. That's why I reference myself as a provider and life coach. I provide resources to the community.
Okay. Well, provider, I think, frequently indicates that you, like if you see a medical provider, you expect treatment.
Right. And I'm not licensed very clear across my website for a reason, because I am not. I refer people out, and that is in all my disclosures as well.
Okay. Also, your website says that your services include psychological services.
And life coaching, so I can refer them out for psychological services.
Okay, but the psychological services is in there, so that would indicate you do them.
I do not do psychological services. I refer for psychological services.
Okay, that's not clear. And then a last issue here, and I think other board members would have questions or concerns as well, but it says informed consent for psychotherapy and life coaching. Mm-hmm. So that would, again, indicate or imply that you provide psychotherapy.
I provide life coaching, and I refer out for the other. I have a person that works very close with me that I can refer to.
Okay. Does your business currently still make use of an office space in Avondale?
No. Avondale. I've relocated out of state. The office is closed. This has been a learning experience for me. I've taken the advice of the gal who was emailing me from the board. I've learned a lot about the terminology and how sensitive the terminology is. And I've never had anybody file in so many arrays and areas that, honestly, without legal expertise in building a business, I felt it needed to be closed.
Okay, thank you.
Dr. Brundage.
Thank you for coming, Ms. Tanner. I was on that complaint screening committee, and I have grave concerns because I know that in reviewing your paperwork, it's really quite in depth. And what I would like to do is ask the board members to go to page 46 of 270, where your informed consent is. I think that about the CEO, which is you, I, April Tanner, BSA, MSP, MSC, CCMH, am blessed with the opportunity to provide individual service to meet a diverse population need, assist others in need, and bring heart back to communities by offering quality care and integrative services. And then you go on to suggest or insist that you're registered through the Secretary of State of Arizona, Christian Counseling Directory, American Counseling Association, which you claim to be a member. However, I'm clearly hearing that you don't have those qualifications, and the American Psychological Association, and you indicate a membership there. Division 28, Psychopharmacology and Substance Abuse, and a member of Psychology Day, a member of NAADAC, and registered for SAMHSA.
Substance Abuse and...
Thank you.
Mental Health Services Administration of the Federal Government.
Thank you.
How is anyone registered through that?
Okay. So, my question to you is, what are your qualifications? What actually is going on? Because that list, I don't understand how you can be involved in that membership with the credentials that you're claiming to have.
I have a master's in psychology and a master's in mental health and clinical counseling. And so with that, that's what those required in order to become a member. And then I paid the membership fees, and then I get a lot of information that's psychoeducation for me and teaches me about different areas within those memberships.
Okay. And where did you receive your degrees?
From University of Phoenix.
And so you help me understand why you then are not licensed as a in the Board of Behavioral Health.
400 question exam, and I keep studying for it with hopes to get to that level, but that's why I have pending on there. I haven't taken the board exam. I took it once fresh out of school, and it was a learning curve, and I have to take it again.
Dr. Myers.
Ms. Tanner, thank you. Are you receiving supervision from anyone?
No, because I'm not going. I haven't done my LAC. So.
Have you submitted an application
for
your LAC?
No, because I have to take the exam.
Okay. Thank you. And my last question is, the complainant submitted a piece of paper saying there were two medications that she should look into. Did you write that for her?
No, I can't write medications. As a life coach, all I do is gather information at first, and then we build off of that. We never got to the building off of it. So everything was gathering information to find out what resources would be best for her.
So you're saying you did not give her that information about medication?
No, I've questioned medications she was on.
Okay. Did you give her any advice on what medications she should look into?
No, sir.
Okay. Thank you.
Dr. David.
Thank you. Thank you for being here, Ms. Tanner. Mm-hmm. I'd like to go back to some of the information on the website, because I have to say, having reviewed the website in preparation for this meeting, I have grave concerns that it's even still up and operational with the information that's provided on there. I would ask the board to look at page 47 of the PDF. And down where it talks about a brief glance of services provided, not services that can be referred to. It reads, services are designed for all individuals, couples, families, and organizations. At Footsteps to Serenity and Psychological Services, we provide a vast array of eclectic, theoretical, methodological approaches. It goes on to talk about incorporating psychological insight and resources in aid to reduce stress and essentially associated symptomology to include, and you go on to list a litany of approaches to treatment, including CBT, REBT, holistic theoretical methodologies. At some point, you even list applied behavior analysis, which is also governed by this board. How is the public not to assume that you are providing or capable to provide these services based on the terminology that's clearly out in the public realm right now?
Everything I did is methodology. On that part of my website, which has been updated, again, this has been a learning curve for me. But everything was methodology or theory because I am not licensed.
Thank you. What is?
But I have learned, just so you know, the sensitivity of the words.
And to the question earlier about your involvement in going through your master's in counseling and working through the studying for the exam, is it an acceptable term to say that your LAC is pending? Is that an acceptable form of communicating to the public where you stand in your training? Is that approved by the Board of Behavioral Health Examiners?
I do not have an LAC, so I'm still going for my LAC.
So my question,
but it's
what
very
is pending?
Clear I'm not licensed.
What I don't. What does pending mean? Pending doesn't tell me you're not licensed. Pending says you're at some state of in this process. What I just heard you in terms of your testimony to us, you suggested that you're not involved in the process. The process is that you're studying. Then the process kind of begins with taking the exam and so on and getting supervision, as Dr. Myers spoke to. So my question is, where does this term impending come from? Is this something you created, or is it something that comes from the board?
No, it's something that without knowing the sensitivity of the levels that this would go to, it was like an aspiration, a goal, reaching toward my licensure.
Thank you. No further questions from me, sir.
Any, Dr. Brundage?
Ms. Tanner, have you applied to start the whole process? I mean, you're not even in the queue at this point, correct? For Board of Behavioral Health.
Correct. I took my exam fresh out of school, and then I had scheduled to take it again, but I had surgery, so I'm still in limbo on it.
And when did you graduate?
It was 2018.
Okay.
Or 17, 18.
Okay. I'm sorry for the hum. I'm looking at your telehealth provider, and again, if I didn't know what I do about the therapeutic levels of community, I would think that you would be licensed in whatever. Your documentation is pretty sophisticated for someone who does life coaching. You have moved out of state, is that correct?
Yes, we drove here to attend today.
Okay.
For the experience and to all learn.
All right. Do you have any kind of client base here that you would reach to them regarding telehealth?
No, I've closed it completely because, one, it brings a fear in me because I had to learn through this process. And like I said, that it would be, I feel before I ever move forward again or attempt to move forward again, it would be best to have somebody legally be able to assist me with that process. I've also updated my website where the terminology has been very reduced. There's no more psychology wording on there other than my pictures of my degrees. It's very clear life coaching. It's been a learning experience, so I've adjusted everything to that, but I have no clientele, I have no office, I have shut everything down.
Madison, why do you have the website?
I haven't had the opportunity to close the website because I've been in a relocation process.
I'm sorry.
Life coaches have training, have certifications, have more and more additional in requests to become qualified. Have you done anything in the life coaching arena?
I've just worked in the clinical field in the past, and I was trying to use my experience in order to help others. That was my goal, is to help others have resources and not feel lost in the community. That was my goal. It turned into a big learning curve for me.
Well, and unfortunately, my sense at this point is that according to the complainant, you've done more harm than you've done good with her. Do you have any aspirations of gaining more information if you decide to remain in the life coaching? How do you get trained? I think one of the things I'm aware of is that many of your mistakes would have been addressed well by a supervisor, and I don't see any attempt for consultation, for supervision. You said you would consult with an attorney, but in some respects, I think you need to connect with someone in the field, whether it's life coaching or if it's the Board of Behavioral Health or whatever, and I don't know where you've moved, but I'm sure there's someone there, because the information I'm seeing is just so far out of what a life coach would do, and I think that it's really disturbing. People would really have a problem with this.
My goal would be to not do anything until I go and get my licensure. That would be the best, and then everything's covered. Not everybody accepts just LAC anymore. Arizona now honors LAC for licensure. But still, even so, my goal would be to accomplish and succeed on my exam before ever considering moving forward.
What do you mean LAC for licensure?
Licensed Associate Counselor.
Yes, that's a step on your way to an LPC.
Right.
What do you mean Arizona accepts? Those are two distinct different licenses they
have. Now you can practice as with an LAC.
Under supervision?
Yes.
Are you under supervision?
I haven't done my LAC to be under supervision.
Okay. Did you, and I reference page 59, did you on your stationery give this client in your writing two medications?
No.
No. Did you discuss two medications?
We discussed several medications.
That's not your writing.
Those are her asking me, going through her medications with me and me jotting stuff down.
Is that your writing?
Yes.
So you were discussing a urinary retention and antihypertensive with her?
She discussed with me everything she was going through, and I was taking notes.
I was curious. Your business cards, your propaganda, your marketing stuff all says Footsteps to Serenity and Psychological Services. Nowhere on there does it say life coaching.
It's all over my website and discussed.
I'm talking about your business card and your letterhead and everything. It says Footsteps to Serenity and Psychological Services.
That was the name by the state of Arizona that I had put, but it has been changed.
So you're promoting a life coaching business by calling yourself Serenity and Psychological Services?
It's what was on my website, yes. Very clear.
It's what you put on everything, including your business cards.
My business cards...
I have copies of them, yes.
Okay.
They don't say life coaching. In terms of life coaching, did you take a degree in life coaching?
I have two master's degrees, so no, I did not.
So you have no degree in life coaching. Do you belong to an association of life coaches?
No.
Do you subscribe to a code of ethics of life coaches?
I'm just with a network that goes with life coaches online. And we.
Are you certified as a life coach?
No.
By any of the national certification bodies? Are you a member of the American Psychological Association?
Yes.
At what level?
At a master level.
They don't have master's level memberships. There are three levels or four levels of membership. What is your level?
I put down that I'm as a master level.
What does your paperwork say you are? A student member?
Yes.
So you're a student member of
the
American...
When I had obtained that, yes.
Pardon?
When I had obtained it, yes.
Okay. What does it mean you're a member of SAMHSA?
Because I had applied through SAMHSA to gain information from SAMHSA and learn more about their program.
You're registered through SAMHSA means you sent them a request for literature?
No, you'd pay a fee to become a member of them.
There's no membership of SAMHSA. Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration is a federal entity, agency, that provides educational materials to the professionals.
All of my numbers are provided for membership, and they can be verified.
Okay. You remember the American Counseling Association?
Yes.
And you subscribe to their code of ethics?
Yes.
Okay. Dr. Brundage.
It was for a learning process.
It should have been learned in school, part of two master's degrees, which apparently wasn't. You're attempting to learn in practice at the expense of consumers, at the expense of clients, what you should have learned in school, and apparently didn't. You don't come out of school with a graduate degree and practice on people what you should have learned in school.
I didn't provide practice. I did an intake.
There's no difference between intake, treatment planning, and services. As soon as you sit down with a client, you are providing a service. Intake is not something that's separate and apart from psychological services, therapeutic services, or counseling. That's something we teach in school with folks that get actual graduate degrees.
question is, I hear clearly that you are no longer here. But I also know that you still have a presence online. You have your web page. You have Psychology Today. And they are stating that you are here. And you do have that Avondale address.
It's been updated.
Okay. When... What's been updated?
The website has been updated.
Okay. And so if I were to go to the website right now, it would say what?
It would say that very clear I'm a life coach. It would say very clear that I am not here.
Okay. And would it say where you have gone?
No, because I'm in transition right now.
Okay. So you're just out on the web?
It just hasn't been closed. I have to wait for it to, cancellation to come around.
And when is your plan to cancel it?
When my billing cycle comes around.
Okay.
It just won't rerun.
All right. It is false information on some of this. I mean, you've updated some of it, but Psychology Today still has Psychological, correct? That has not been updated.
Yeah, no, I still have to update everything.
Okay. The problem is that today we're looking at protecting the public. Mm-hmm. I hear that you've had a very steep learning curve through this process, but we're concerned that the public could still be bamboozled.
I'm not accepting any clients or anything at this time to put them.
But the information is out there, and I know sometimes it's hard to go to every nook and cranny that may be mentioned, but I think it's critical that you eliminate any presence at all that indicates what you have done before. Okay?
Yes, ma'am. I'm on board.
Good. Are there any other questions? Dr. Flower?
This is a comment. I believe board staff actually went to the Avondale facility the past few days, and you still have a presence there. I mean, maybe your body's not there, obviously, but there's an office, there's cards, and so forth. And then you indicated you had updated your website, but a lot of these services that are highly questionable that you really should not be providing are still listed as services. You know, so it's not just taking out that, you know, Psychological, it's like Alzheimer's care or whatever. I mean, that's, give me a break. You know, that just should not be anywhere near there. Right. And if you want to say you learn about referral to other places, you don't say you provide them. You can give information. That's a whole different kind of situation.
Mm. I have two brief comments, Mr. Chair.
Oh, well, we're going to go into deliberation unless you have questions. For...
Fair enough.
No? Any? Okay, questions? Go ahead.
I'm sorry. This is Amy. May I briefly mention one more thing?
No, we're done. We're going into deliberation now. Thank you. Dr. Flower, would you start the deliberative process, and you can return to your seat if you'd like.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think we've all expressed a great amount of concerns about Ms. Tanner. She has basically advertised services for which she's not really eligible to provide, and she solicited clients and worked with them, done some things with them that are questionable, and to me it's troubling, and we need to take some kind of action, as Dr. Brunda said, to protect the public. And certainly, hopefully, Ms. Tanner's learning that just learning about some things, taking classes, seminars, and getting literature doesn't qualify you to open a business to provide services. So I invite other comments.
Dr. Brundage.
I'm gravely concerned that her presence is still very much a part of the web. There's questions that her presence is still in Avondale and carts and other kind of things. I know that there is another business in her office, but I also know that her cards are still available. I do believe Ms. Tanner has learned a great deal during this experience, but I also know that we need to have full assurance that everything is closed down. Now, our options are limited. We can go a cease and desist. We did subpoena her here, and thank you for coming because it was extremely important that we speak with you. But, you know, how do we ensure that the public is protected? I would be more inclined to go to a cease and desist, which is a legal fashion, and that means that you can't really deal with it when you have time. It's you have to deal with it right now. So that's kind of the thing I'm thinking about. I do think I appreciate Ms. Tanner being here. I appreciate her asking questions. I do think that, and again, my suggestion is very, very sound, is that if indeed you're pursuing a counseling certification or licensure wherever you go, it's extremely important to gain supervision and consultation immediately. So that's kind of my thinking.
I would just echo that. I mean, I think the website is not appropriate as it is now. Whatever cleanup has occurred is not sufficient to protect the public. The telephone numbers still listed are Arizona area codes, which suggests that she is in the state. I am concerned with statements that say I've moved out of state, as if moving out of state is going to kind of make this all go away. I think that's a concerning point, and I tend to think the more appropriate action of the board is to get things moving, perhaps under the cease and desist, so that they can be done in a timely fashion. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Dr. Meyer.
I echo my statements from the previous one that this is a clear violation, and worse than the previous case, that this is fraudulent. The evidence would suggest she's practicing medicine as well. Pending licensure means you're waiting a decision, not thinking about proceeding with this at some point. So I think this is of much more concern.
Mr. Chair.
Dr. Davies.
I would also add, too, that there's other social sites, Yelp and other sites, that would need to be included in some of the revisions. As a business owner myself, the time that it would take to shut down my website over the time that it takes to make edits is substantially different. So I'm concerned with the inconsistency in responses and of initiative to move forward with making the necessary changes.
My thought is this presents as an ethical violation of a dozen standards in APA. She claims to be a member. It's at least a dozen standards, if not more, in ACA, in terms of their ethical code, and at least half a dozen standards in the life coaching area. You pretty much are a three for three in terms of striking out on standards. You really have to search to be a positive oriented person and find something that's not in violation on her web pages or documentation or services. And it reeks, it just as you look at this, of not just misrepresentation and misleading the public, but fraud. And that concerns me greatly. I don't think going out of state is going to solve anything. I think maybe if she wants to learn to practice, she needs to learn to practice ethically and needs to get herself a mentor or a trainer or a degree in the field that teaches her the difference between psychology and counseling and life coaching.
Is there a way to also address the collection agencies for the claimant that if she's still pursuing money from the claimant?
I don't know that we have a role in that or can do anything legally there. Certainly somebody who was harmed could probably get a transcript of what happened at the Board of Psychology Examiners and provide that to somebody, but I think we've pretty clear that services here are fraudulent.
Okay.
But as a board, we can't act and do anything. No further discussion. Is there a motion on this one?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I may need some assistance in this.
Yes.
I think we can agree that she be issued a cease and desist order pursuant to ARS 32-3226C for fraudulently providing psychological services and advertising for them. I have one date, but there are many, but the date that she met with the client would be May 30th of 2019, but there's ongoing advertising.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure how to phrase that beyond what I've said.
And for offering and providing psychological services and a continuation of misrepresenting her credentials and licensure status or process?
That sounds much better.
Is there a second?
I second.
Do you need a voice vote on this, or?
Yes, please.
Roll call.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Dr. Bohansky?
Yes.
Dr. Brundage?
Yes.
Dr. Malott?
Yes.
Dr. Meyer?
Yes.
Dr. Flowers?
Yes.
Dr. Davis-Wilson?
Yes.
Dr. Davey?
Yes.
Motion is unanimous. Motion carries.
Thank you very much.
Dr. Bohansky, just for clarification and maybe for the students' benefit, she is not licensed, so what we can do is issue the cease and desist. Maybe an explanation, had she been licensed and there would have been more options available to the board, there could have been probation, you know, suspension all the way up to revocation, but because she doesn't have a license, cease and desist is like about all we can do.
And the same would have been true for the Board of Behavioral Health Examiners. If she held a license there, she would have been put on probation or suspended, most likely suspended, because you have serious enough violations here. But when they don't hold a license, all we can do is inform the public and do a cease and desist and hope to hell they stop what they're doing. But the sad truth of it is that there's lots of snake oil out there and lots of folks that sell it. So.
Do you want the staff to submit to the Board of Behavioral Health Examiners a copy of the cease and desist?
Yes. I would like the Board of Behavioral Health to know it. And I'd also like to send it to adjoining states if there's a way to do that.
I'm not sure we can do
but
that.
But I will forward it to the Board of Behavioral Health as soon as it is issued.
Okay.
And they have a pending complaint against her as well.
I'm going to look at time. We have 2 minutes, 3 minutes before our next timed item.
If we may, we can go to agenda item number 21. It should be a quick discussion.
Okay. Agenda item 21. This is regarding the date. Ms. Michelson, will you go ahead and tell us what your thoughts are here?
Yes. Actually, Dr. Malott requested that I put this item on the agenda. This meeting date is scheduled for Thursday, December 12th. The reason it was scheduled for Thursday is we didn't have any available rooms on Friday. Dr. Malott had recently reached out and indicated that NAU's graduation date is on the 12th, the same date of the meeting, and also expressed concern that perhaps there might be other graduations on the same date or around that time. So I wanted to check with the members to ensure that all of you will be available on this date so that we have quorum, and if potentially some of the members aren't available, then to discuss different dates.
So moving it from what to what?
Well, at this point, we can keep it on December 12th. We still would have quorum. I just wanted to check with the members to make sure that all of you would be here.
Dr. Brundage.
In that our numbers are dwindling quickly and that we're fighting for quorum, I mean, that means that nobody can be sick or no one can have a, you know, any kind of problems. I'm really concerned that if we miss Dr. Malott at that time, that we may have further concerns of trying to get quorum. I'd even be willing to switch it to a Wednesday or something. I just think that at this point, unless we are graced with the appointment, we're going to have some problems.
And at this point for the December 12th meeting, with Dr. Malott not being present, we would have 7 members. So we need 6 for quorum, but I wasn't sure if anyone else might be absent from that meeting. So
how heavy of an agenda is it?
There will be a couple cases.
I'm just wondering if...
This is Dr. Malott. You know, I could possibly call in. I was hoping to be the previous week, but that's okay. And if I can come, I will come. Especially if the agenda is light, because I have to be back by around 4 or 5.
Let me make just throw a proposal out here. We could do a telephonic meeting in December. We have a 2-day January in-person meeting.
Just one thing I'd like to clarify. One of the December cases, we did subpoena the licensee to appear. So that might, you know, be something the board wants to consider. And we did look at possible dates where rooms would be available. Unfortunately, a lot of the meeting rooms are already booked. So the only other days I could see available for a board meeting would be December 11th or December 16th.
Well, that's a date that we'll live in infamy. What flavor of the week is 11?
Wednesday. Meeting is currently for December 12th, which is the Thursday. So,
you know what? Let's go ahead and not make any changes. I'm going to do my best to be there.
Okay.
Dr. Bohansky, I do not have the 2-day meeting in January on my calendar. When is that?
I haven't sent all the members the 2020 calendar
I'm coming
yet.
Off a proposed calendar we're going to talk about later.
I generally need lots of notice. 2 days.
Yes, and I'll also tell you that Ms. Michelson has reserved the rooms for 2021 already, so that we were sure to get in on them once we figured out there was a competition.
And I actually did part of 2022 as well. Just kept going.
This board has got the damn room reserved well into 2022, but I don't know what we're going to do in December. So we'll go from there. All right, it's 11 o'clock. I'd like to go into our timed item that is scheduled for this point in time.
I've never been to one of these.
Yes. Thank you for coming. This is a continuation of the informal interview for Dr. Mager, complaint number 1833. We're going to discuss, consider possible action regarding results of the fitness for duty evaluation and possible adjudication of the same. Dr. Brundage, can you bring us up to date?
Thank you. Members of the board, I'm the lead member on complaint number 18-33 regarding Mark Major, PsyD, and license number 4010. The complaint stems from a court-ordered intensive psychotherapy on May 26, 2017. Dr. Major was appointed by the court to provide service to JY. Therapy was to begin in October and scheduled to end in April. A licensee was asked to update court every 2 months. After repeated calls, texts, and mail, Dr. Major did not respond to JY's request to provide information to the court in a timely fashion. JY claims that Dr. Major canceled appointments, that their schedule was interrupted, and that it impacted his ability to finish the court process. When Dr. Majors was contacted, he responded in a timely fashion through his attorney, Charles Hoover. Dr. Major states that therapy was delayed until November 2017 and ended October 2018. He confirmed that he felt that one report would be sent out after counseling termination. In February 2, 2019, the Complaint Screening Committee reviewed case and several possible violations were identified. the concerns regarding record keeping, providing services unprofessional by current standards, and refusing to furnish records to the board in a timely fashion, and to the complainant. On April 5th, the board conducted an initial review. After deliberation, the board forwarded the case to an informal interview for Arizona Revised Statute 32-2061, 16H, Arizona Revised Statute 32-2061, 16O, and ARS 32-2061, 16CC. On June 7, 2019, the case went before the board for an informal interview. The board offered Dr. Major an interim consent agreement that would require him to undergo a fitness for duty. The evaluation was completed on August 14, 2019 by Dr. Daniel Blackwood, who was a provider that was approved by Jenna Jones, our previous board executive director. Information has been included with Dr. Blackwood's response, and at this point, thank you again for coming. That's the end of my brief overview.
Hi. board members, materials for this agenda item are in your electronic folder. Dr. Manger has come forward. You are represented by counsel today. Correct. Could you please introduce yourselves?
Yes, good morning. Charlie Hover, attorney for Dr. Major.
Mark Major.
And I'm Dr. Bohansky, chairman of the board. The other board members and staff will now introduce themselves. Dr. Davis, would you start?
Dr. Brian Davey, behavior analyst member.
Dr. Diana Davis-Wilson, behavior analyst member.
Dr. Lynn Flowers, psychologist member.
Dr. Matt Meyer, university rep.
Dr. Janice Brundage, licensed psychologist.
Jean Galvin, Assistant Attorney General.
Jennifer Michelson, Interim Executive Director.
Kathy Fowkes, Licensing Specialist.
Krishna Poe, Administrative Assistant.
Thank you.
And Ramona Malott, Academic Board Member, Psychologist Board Member.
Thank you, Doctor. At the awareness, this is being audiotaped. Everyone must speak loudly and clearly, and only one person at a time, please. Doctor, you've received a letter informing you of the matters to be discussed today, possible actions the board may take in an informal interview. Purpose of this informal interview is to inquire into the facts and circumstances of this case. Members have already read all the materials and additional submissions that have been made. If it's necessary to refer to clients or patients, remember that we do that by initials only. I will have to read the allegations formally here and give you notice. The complaint is that Dr. Manger, the allegations brought against you in case number 1833 are as follows: ARS 32-2061-16H for failing or refusing to maintain, retain adequate business records, financial or professional records pertaining to the psychological services provided to a client and or patient, 16O for providing services that are unnecessary, unsafe, or otherwise engaging in activities as a psychologist that are unprofessional by the current standards of practice, and 16CC for failing to make available to a client, patient, or the client's patient's designated representative on written request a copy of the client's patient record, including raw test data, psychometric testing material, or other information provided by law. I will now swear you in. Please raise your right hand. Do you swear to tell the whole truth, nothing but the truth?
I do.
Thank you. Legal counsel, doctor, do you have an opening statement?
No, sir. I'm sure you'd like to get to it with Dr. Major. I'd just like to reserve some time for comments at the end of the interview session, if it's appropriate.
Thank you. Then we can begin the interview. Dr. Brundage, any questions?
I know that the fitness for duty was delayed because of the fact that it was difficult to get a provider to do that, and Dr. Blackwell's report is within our material. I have some questions, I believe, and would prefer to go into executive session because of issues, but I think I have no questions at this point to you.
Is there a motion?
I make a motion.
I'll second it.
That's to go into executive session to review confidential information.
With or without the respondent?
I think without.
Without?
Is that?
Yeah, if you want to, if you have questions about it among yourselves that you want to discuss.
Correct.
Okay. I think he would have a right to be in here because you're discussing that report.
Okay.
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 All right.
So we had a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Welcome to CenturyLink Conferencing. Please enter your passcode followed by the pound or hash key, and I'll connect you. Please hold while I confirm your passcode. Thank you. Your passcode is confirmed. When you hear the tone, you will be the first person to join the meeting. The line will be silent until another person joins.
Dr. Malavi, go on. Hello. Dr. Malata, are you on?
Yes.
Thank you. Okay, we're back in regular session. Ms. Michelson, could you update us with where we stand on consent agreement?
Yes, absolutely. Dr. Major entered into a consent agreement in order with the board on a previous case. This was effective March 27th. He is currently under practice monitoring with Dr. Christopher Nichols, and I actually did just receive the first quarterly supervision report the other day. So that is for case number 18-08. And the board for this case, Dr. Major entered into the interim consent agreement order effective June 28th for the fitness for duty evaluation.
So you can find that he's complied with this interim order, and then he is in compliance with the other order. So if you want to adjudicate this 1833 case, you may find that what you would order is part of the other consent, the ongoing monitoring that he is undergoing and participating in.
Dr. Brown.
Dr. Bohansky, Ms. Galvin, exactly what kind of terminology? I guess I'm a bit confused as to how we can do that.
You have 1833 before you.
Right.
Ordering that he undergo fitness for duty evaluation. And he's complied with that interim order. And you have to then adjudicate that case, find that he has complied with this interim consent agreement.
Okay. Dr. Bohansky, I'd like to make a motion.
Dr. Brundage?
I'd like to make a motion that complaint number 1833 with regard to Mark Major's ID is he has complied with our request and that it at this time is adjudicated through the other consent consent order.
You would just find that he's in compliance with the interim consent agreement, and that is no longer effective.
So he is in compliance with the current order in that it's no longer effective.
That he has complied with 1833, and that interim consent agreement is no longer effective.
I'll second that. All in favor, aye.
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 Opposed? Okay, that takes care of 1833. Is
well, just the interim. The,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
The interim consent agreement on 1833.
Do you want to consolidate that with the other the other consent agreement that is in effect, and have him essentially continue monitoring under that first consent agreement?
So combined 1833 with 1808.
Yes.
and continue with the consent agreement that's alive in 1808.
And that would be have to be agreeable to them at this time.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. Dr. Brundage.
I have a question. How long is that monitoring under that consent agreement?
I'm checking 1 second. It's on page 304. I believe for a period of 12 months, and we just received, he just finished the first quarter, and we just got that report.
All right, thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure if it includes some of our concerns from this current complaint. I mean, looking back, we were worried about, again, records below standard of care. Used to telemedicine appeared to be on non-secured lines.
And what we're suggesting is that's being monitored by Dr. Nichols.
That be added to?
Yes.
I'm not sure if it's in the current consent agreement. It could be modified to include those issues and responsiveness to courts and clients, clarity of role in cases.
Yeah.
Those are the key things.
I understood, Dr. Flowers, that you believe that continued monitoring is important in this case and that the
yes.
monitor should review with him compliance with court orders, requests, and record keeping.
Yes, and also confidentiality issues because apparently his son was involved in communicating with the client.
Okay.
You know, those kind of things, but they be part of the focus of the monitoring.
So add to the sort of breadth of the number of issues,
yes.
types of issues.
Okay, and I think we have an agreement by shake of head here.
Yes.
Would there be an extension of the period of time of monitoring?
We haven't discussed that. Dr. Brundage?
I would prefer to wait to look at Dr. Nichols' reports probably mid 6 months, and then we can determine a course of action.
That makes sense. We've got Dr. Nichols in place. We have ongoing monitoring going. We're looking at practice and keeping up with what's going on, and I don't think that we should call it a failure by adding time at this point. It may be completely successful with what we have, and we bring that to a closure when we get Dr. Nichols' reports at some point.
Okay. And the order does say minimum of 12 months.
Yeah. So I would make a motion that we combine the interests of 1833 and 1808, continue with the minimum 12-month monitoring by Dr. Nichols, paying attention to general practice with what he's doing. Is there a second?
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Further discussion? Council, is that clear enough for?
Yes.
All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you very much for coming.
Thank you.
All right. In the spirit of continuing to move effectively, our next time item is not until 1:15, so we can go through some of our other business. I'd like to move into item number 16, discussion, consideration, possible action regarding information received from the National Practitioner Data Bank on Dr. Michael Epstein. Ms. Mickelson.
Yes, Mr. Chairman and board members. This matter is before the board today to determine if the members want to open a complaint for investigation regarding information received by the board office pertaining to Dr. Epstein. Back in September, I received an email notification from the National Practitioner Data Bank, which indicated that there had been an adverse action report filed by the Navy's Bureau of Medicine and Surgery against Dr. Epstein. At that time, I accessed the database and I reviewed the report by the Bureau. It did indicate that Dr. Epstein's clinical privileges had been revoked indefinitely due to sexual misconduct by engaging in sexual conduct with the patient during an encounter in 2015. The board had previously reviewed a complaint regarding the same allegation of sexual misconduct with regards to the same client. The complaint was ultimately dismissed by the CSC at their meeting in April of 2018. When I looked at the report from the data bank, it appears that the Navy's decision to revoke the clinical privileges occurred 2 months after the complaint was dismissed by this CSC. So although the revocation did occur in 2018, they didn't actually report it to the data bank until last month, which is how I got the notification. The board was not previously made aware that his clinical privileges were revoked until reviewing this report. I do not know the status of his employment with the federal government at this time. If the board does choose to open a complaint for investigation, that would be what I would be looking into, and Dr. Epstein would be notified of the complaint and required to submit a response. And this concludes my summary. Thank you.
Thank you. Any discussion? Yes.
I believe that there's enough grave concerns around this that I'd like to learn much more. I remember we discussed it, but had been assured that, you know, we would be kept abreast of this, and I'm aware we haven't.
We weren't kept abreast, and there's more smoke than fire, or more fire than smoke here. So I'd move that we open a complaint from the board looking into the loss of clinical privileges as reported in the National Practitioner Data Bank.
I would second that.
All right, motion and second. All in favor, aye.
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 Motion carries. Thank you. Number 617, discussion, consideration, possible action regarding implementation of the enhanced EPPP. That's me. I'm just going to lay the issue out for everybody. More information is to be coming from ASPPB following Ms. Mickelson and my attendance at the 59th annual meeting in 2 weeks, in which we will see the content. I don't know if the last little informational thing was circulated to us that came out last week, but they're sending little tidbits out there. Here's the long and the short of it, folks. There are 10 states, of which we are one, that have said that we're going to be early adopters. We have not set a firm date for early adoption. It will most likely be sometime after January 1st of 2020. What does that mean? We will use the new EPPP after that date. How we're going to use it, we have to decide between now and the date we decide to start. I'm not sure that we can be ready to start on January 1. I think we may come up with a date that's reasonable to start after that. So that's decision one. Decision two, in that it'll be two parts, and it's intended to take the first part right after finishing coursework, that we may allow people to register through ASPPB to take the exam after their ASPPB certifies they finish their coursework from their training director. And the remainder of the exam, the enhanced part, we do just like we do the exam now. When they finish internship, they have their degree, they make application, they go through the process, we approve them to take the exam. If they've passed part one, if they finish their degree and their internship, then they would take part two, and we continue on in our normal path. That appears to be the least disruptive, but that's a potential for us to decide in the next 3 to 4 months as we go forward. It'll most likely look something like that. Each state will probably do it different. The last decisions we're going to have to make are people who don't pass the education part, at what cutoff point we're going to be looking at that. So people who are in the chute now only have to take the older version of the EPPP. After we come up with a date to implement, people who we approve after that date will have to take, or who apply after that date will have to take the new version of the EPPP. So I think we're going to have to decide on that cutoff point and how we're going to interpret it. But I just wanted people to be aware that we have to make these decisions. I want council to be aware of those decisions to make sure they don't affect any rule changes and we're not stepping outside from what
My humble interpretation of it is we can do what I just suggested without changing any rules. And it also maintains the authority within this board as to who takes the final portion of the new ECCC, much like we do today with the old ECCC at the same point in time. So it doesn't really affect our application review all that much, except there'll be one more document that we'll expect in that, and that's going to be the pass score from ASPPB on the knowledge portion. Dr. Meyer.
So we would not review their applications for to take the ECCC Part 1?
No, correct.
My only concern with that is that they could register and take it here and pass it and use it in another state.
Well, here's the truth of the matter is that anybody in this state could register and take it in another state at any time already without saying a word to us. And when it comes time to apply, lay on us a score and say, see, I've already taken it. That already occurs. So that's not really much of a difference for what we would do. I'm anxious to hear how ASPPB thinks they can handle the paperwork from the directors of training of the programs that say my student has completed all their coursework and is eligible to take the exam. Then that would sit on file just like they took it in another state or they took it at a master's level in another state, what have you. They finish an internship, they get their doctoral degree, they are then, just like now, they finish their internship, they get their doctoral degree, they apply to us, we take the application, we review it, if it's good, we approve them to sit for the ECCC, now the new one, which is the skills exam, where they demonstrate on that exam what they learned during internship, hopefully, and they pass that, and then we license them. That makes sense. So, now, that's all hypothetical because we haven't heard what ASPPB is going to tell us as this rolls out. This is going to roll out over several years. The first 10 states will kind of provide the baseline of all this. And I would expect over the next several years after that, the other 54 jurisdictions will come on board with it. We'll move from there. Any other discussion? We'll know more after the October 19th meeting.
That's what you're going to do.
But I just want to keep it on everybody's agenda that this is coming. This is coming. I'm having people ask, well, when do we? And I don't know because we haven't decided yet. But when we decide, we can let people know.
And when?
Dr. Bohansky.
Go ahead, Dr. Malott.
Okay, I have three voices at the same time. I was just thinking maybe for our December meeting, if maybe Ms. Mickelson can kind of create a tentative calendar, you know, after, just for us to look at, so then we can see dates.
Yeah.
And say, you know, we do this then this then. When the board made the change, this was back in 1992, to require postdoc. There was actually a 2 or 3 year window where people, you know, had the option, and everyone knew about it because I knew I moved to the state then in 91, and everyone was like, do it quick, you know. So I didn't fall under the new rules. But I think having a calendar with everything, you know, just a tentative calendar, and then we can move things back and forth. Might help at the December.
She's shaking her head, yes.
Yes, absolutely.
Dr. Meyer.
So if someone has not taken Part 1 and then is just doing the full application after they've completed internship and postdoc, would they take... would they register for both of them?
They'd register for one, and if they pass that, they'd come back to register for two.
Okay, so it's just a very
you
just
can't
doing
get
very
to two
simple,
unless you pass one.
Just a very simple submission to do one.
Yes.
Okay.
Excellent. Any other questions? Thank you very much. We'll keep on top of this. I just don't want it to get off our radar.
You're going to hear more and more questions from folks about it. When a major change like this comes along, and they come along once every 40, 50 years, people who are around, and I've actually talked to a few when they implemented the EPPP, said it took 10 years before all jurisdictions were on board with it, and another 8 years after that before they agreed on a passing score. So now we've got a revised EPPP. I think we're slicker and meaner and leaner and cleaner, but I still think it's going to take several years for jurisdictions who have to change laws, have to change rules to come on board and make this a smooth transition. If it looks like what the medical folks are doing, yes. You're now looking at what the medical folks call Part 1, the knowledge exam, when they finish their classes, will look like our Part 1 knowledge exam when they finish their classes. And then what the medical people do after internship is Part 2, which is competency, and that's what ours will be, is Part 2, competency after they finish internship. Medical students then go do residency and take Part 3. Our folks go out and practice, and our Part 3 is ABEP, the ABEP exam. So we will look very similar to other healthcare professions. We are presently the only healthcare profession that doesn't test competence. We only test knowledge. So that's the direction we're moving, as that is. All right, next piece on here is discussion, consideration, action regarding verbiage for number 10 on the postdoctoral professional supervised experience verification form. Dr. Flowers.
Okay, let me scroll down. Basically, there's a lot of confusion about what it says. Basically, currently, number 10 says, was 50% or less of the face-to-face supervision completed using confidential real-time visual telecommunication or other confidential electronic means? And then parentheses, if more than 50% of face-to-face supervision was completed using real-time visual communication or other confidential electronic means, please provide the percentage. And a lot of the people filling out that form are puzzled about really how to answer. Suggestion would be to change it to make it more clear. I put together something that I think is more clear. Of course, I do not speak for the board. I'm just throwing it out. I would say that it would be this. It was at least 50% of face-to-face supervision completed in person. What percentage of confidential real-time visual telecommunication or other confidential electronic means was used for supervision? Please provide percentage. I think that's a lot more clear. Because really what the other one is saying was they want to make sure at least 50% is face-to-face, body next to each other kind of supervision. If it's 50% or more, clear, done, move on. So I'm not sure if I'm adding confusion or clarifying.
Every time we change
the first question, is that two questions, Dr. Flowers?
Well, yes. What I start with, it's not the double negative thing anymore. It just says, was at least 50% of face-to-face supervision completed in person? And then it'd be yes. And then if no, I guess we could put that in. If no, what percentage of confidential real-time visual communication or other confidential electronic means was used for supervision? And then please provide percentage. So really, if they answer yes to the first one, then there's no need to say how much electronics were used. I think that's easier.
I don't know if we need a separate question for the if no,
okay.
Because the board, the directions for the form says if you answer no to any question on the form, please provide additional information.
Okay.
So,
okay,
because
then.
If you say if no, because to me, if it's a no, then they haven't met one of our statute requirements.
Okay, maybe it could be put.
And we would have to go back and really look at it.
Well, I think it could be divided out, so it would, yes, it'd be okay. I think it'd be somewhere else. Because I know.
No, any of the questions, if they say no, say the question was, do you have to supervise? And they say no.
Oh, okay.
Then it comes up for a detailed review and they have to answer it. You know, we don't have a place where they, you know, they just have to answer that question separately on a separate piece of paper. And that's the direction for all of the other questions if they say no.
That no is
if
the,
I'm not mistaken.
No is the correct answer, you might say. But I don't know if we can modify the form some to make this more clear.
I like the single.
Just the one question.
Whatever.
Hmm. Or you just say, well, I can't think of the other way of putting it.
Well, we improved the MMPI when we took out the double negative. So if we're smart enough to do that, we're smart enough to take out the double negative in this question as well. And I would say let's work on a little wording to fix that so we get the double negative out of it. The whole intent was permissive, actually. We were trying to say to help people in rural Arizona and folks out there that you could, in fact, get supervised 50% of the time or less over telemed. And that's assuming that you're professional and using secure telemed. I don't think you need to get into all the definitions of telemed.
They should know how to do it correctly.
If you're supervising, in especially in rural areas, or you're providing supervision, 50% or less of it provided by telemed. And if they answer yes, they're in compliance. And if they say no, then there's a problem. So I think that might be the answer right there, is 50% or less of your supervision provided electronically.
Okay, that'd be...
Boom. God damn, we solved that one. All right.
And a yes?
I'm going to go write me a new version of the MMPI next.
That sounds good. So, but that would still be yes is the correct answer.
Which is what we want.
Okay.
So I think we are having problems with the word less. And people are saying no to that because they're saying, no, it wasn't 50% or less. It was 50% or more. So
then they're a problem that they say no.
They're not, but the problem is they mean yes, but they're marking no. That's the problem.
Okay, because it's kind of like
they
know.
They really have 100%.
Because I know, like, years ago when I joined the military, there were all these no, 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 and then at one point it said you have vision in both eyes, people would write no because they're used to putting the no's for everything. And that was a trick question.
Let's work on the wording.
But, yeah, we're not joining the military here.
Question 19, or agenda item 19, discussion consideration possible actions regarding proposed rules approved by the Committee on Behavior Analysts. Ms. Michelson.
Yes, Mr. Chairman and board members. At the Committee on Behavior Analysts last meeting on September 27th, they reviewed the proposed rule changes that were drafted by the rules writer for behavior analysts. At that time, the committee approved the draft rule and recommended forwarding it to the board for their review and approval. The draft rule changes are attached to the memo that I uploaded the other day, and I believe there were a total of 8 sections amended. And just to note, the governor's office had changed their protocol for requesting exemptions to the rulemaking moratorium. So now they want to see the actual proposed rule changes before an approval will be granted. And this concludes my summary.
Thank you. Have folks had a chance to look at these proposed rule changes? Any concerns? Hearing none, do we have a motion to forward them?
I'll make a motion to forward them.
To the governor's office for approval to make rules changes.
Seek an exemption. Yes.
Seek an exemption request.
We have a motion on the floor. A second?
I'll make the second.
And the motion is to forward to the governor's office the proposed rules so that we can get an exception to work on making proposed rule changes.
That's exactly correct.
Politics is wonderful, isn't it? All in favor, aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. Number 20, we have review, discussion, possible action regarding statute changes for behavior analysts, including but not limited to exemptions from licensure and remote supervision. Dr. Davis Wilson, would you provide the board with an update?
Yes, Mr. Chair and board members. At the last board meeting, I did bring up an idea to potentially, if we're going to have to open legislation to change some statute, to make some changes to the behavior analyst statutes. We did meet as a committee to discuss three different sections. One was resolved in the rule package that was sent over by Ms. Hamm that was specific to the ethics. We did have concern about our statute not having ethics that would give the board the ability to make any decisions that they need in lieu of having a dated BACB version of the ethics. Ms. Hamm was able to revise that in the rules to a point of us feeling that it is comfortable. The rule now does include that it could be whatever the board adopts as current for the BACB unless the board disagrees with the current version. And so we were able to resolve that. The two other areas that we would like to propose moving forward with legislative changes for. One was around supervision, where the supervised experience does have the 1,500 hours across three different types of supervision. In that supervision statute, it did not appear to us to be very clear as to where the location of supervision services should lie, and thus we've been getting a lot of applicants that are remotely supervising without a license and then or being remotely supervised without a license, and we're having to allow them to withdraw their application and encourage them to redo their hours. So the small language change that we're proposing for there, one would be to still keep the language related to the 1,500 hours. The three different program types are defined in rule, so we do have, you know, the proposal to just remove those three, being that is the one change in 2022 that is changing. They're changing the title, so again, it's not a huge deal. But the one piece that we would like to add is a section in there that says that the supervision must occur, and we have it in the application already, but that the supervision must occur by an individual licensed in the state in which the provision of services apply. And so we are proposing that language a rendition of by the time it makes it through all the edit processes. But just to make it very clear to people reading it that if you are in Arizona and you're being supervised by somebody that is not in Arizona and not licensed, that is not eligibility for licensure. So to just make that clear. The second piece of information that we noted was specific to licensure exemptions, and the language itself, I think, just mirrors the psychology statute regarding an exemption for those that are employed by a public school system and otherwise certified by the Department of Education. One of the problems that we're running into is the Department of Education really certifies teachers and school psychologists, and so there really isn't a behavior analyst title that is certified by the Department of Education. And so we were looking at proposing some language changes around that specifically to make sure it's clear that there isn't really a certification through the Department of Education, and then to look to the board as far as what they would want that language to be. Because we had discussions of if we just took that section out, then it would be if you're employed by a common school, you don't have to be licensed. And I think the committee expressed some concerns of completely removing that, because we do want to encourage schools to continue to utilize qualified practitioners in those positions, because otherwise, in Section B, it does kind of allow for those that are defined in IDEA. And some of the 504 language that, somebody who would be lesser qualified would be able to provide those services. And so we don't want to discourage the schools from using qualified individuals because of the potential of licensure being in the way. And that was kind of the language specifics, like I said, could be crafted. But our concern is that and certify by, because with that in there, then technically there really isn't an exemption, because there is no other certification except that of which exists under the psychologist statute for school psychologists or for teachers who would be exempt under Section B. So we were, that is the one area that we would propose some legislative changes for. And that concludes the summary of our discussion.
Thank you very much. Any discussion?
I'll just elaborate on the discussion on the final point with regard to the issue around the schools. Some of the language that we are just having a discussion about, Dr. Davidson, myself, Dr. Davis-Wilson, was around the idea that we did not want to restrict paraprofessionals, special education teachers, from being able to use positive reinforcement and all the terms that fall under the practice of behavior analysis. And so we were quite aware of that as we were trying to figure out how to work through this language, because we in no way would want to essentially restrict critical services from those receiving special education services in the school systems. And so that was really our discussion. There's no issue that we need to clean up some of the language. It's just we did not want to have some collateral damage where this put us in conflict with the educational system.
Good. I get in conflict with that.
No, but Diana's point is correct, though. There is a certification of a behavior analyst inside of Arizona Department of Education rules and regulations. So we'll work through it.
Other discussion? Do we need to act today?
I would suggest that the board move that staff undertake efforts to get the legislation moving.
Is there a motion?
So moved.
Second?
I'll second it.
All in favor, aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Board members, it is now 12 o'clock. We have a timed item at 1:15, which is the only item on the agenda we've not touched.
Wow.
Therefore, I am going to call a recess to this meeting, so you may have lunch, enjoy yourself, relax a little bit, make sure we are in seats at 1 o'clock so that we can go through our 1:15 timed meeting, which will get us out of here by 2.
Yes.
Good?
We do have some snacks, more snacks in the executive.